to hold firm until September, and then they will be rewarded for keeping hold of those hostages.
Horror in the skies. Horror if you're trying to get away on your holidays as flights are disrupted by a collapse yet again of air traffic control. One passenger.
I have a 40-minute drive ahead of me at the other end, and I'm not sure whether or not the car rental company that I'm using is even going to be open by the time we land.
In other news, a plan to redo Heathrow Airport that won't involve digging up the M25. And the war of words concerning Nigel Farage and being on the side of Jimmy Savile continues. He's here taking your calls.
So, Mr. Kyle, can I have an apology, please?
Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the head of the air traffic control provider, NATS, is facing calls to resign over another technical glitch. Dozens of flights had to be grounded before a backup system was activated yesterday afternoon. NATS, which has apologised, says it was a radar-related issue. Aviation consultant John Strickland says the airlines have to deal with the consequences.
They want to get their customers moved. They have the headache of picking up the pieces when they can't operate for reasons out of their control. But they want to see a system that is reliable. I mean, it is reliable 99% plus of the time, but just, you know, 1 hour failure has an enormous impact, particularly at the London area airports in terms of knock-on.
Ministers say they're working closely with NATS to understand what went wrong. Heathrow is preparing to unveil its long-awaited plan for a third runway. It's expected to cost up to £60 billion, with a section of the M25 diverted through a tunnel underneath the site. Ministers are also expected to consider rival proposals, including a plan for a shorter runway. Canada is to formally recognise a Palestinian state alongside France and the UK in September. Britain has said it will take that step unless Israel agrees to a ceasefire and moves to end the crisis in Gaza. Israel says the countries are rewarding Hamas. The Metropolitan Police is to more than double its use of controversial live facial recognition. The system, used to identify wanted offenders, will be deployed up to 10 times a week in London. LBC's Fraser Knight has more details.
Since they started using this in London, more than 1,000 arrests have been made. 773 of those have led to charges or cautions. But you have some groups who say this is being used without proper legal oversight. Others who say they think it has a bias against women and against people of colour. But the Metropolitan Police saying that this is highly accurate. It is technology that works.
And the latest audience figures show LBC remains the UK's leading commercial radio news talk brand. 3.4 million people are now tuning in every week, and 1.4 million are choosing Nick Ferrari at breakfast to start their day. So thank you for listening. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 91.36 after closing unchanged last night. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.16. LBC weather, heavy and thundery showers in southern parts of the UK, quite cloudy elsewhere. A high of 25 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
How do you grow a perfectly sweet strawberry? Well, it takes more than just soil and water, but time, care and the best conditions to flourish. At Tesco, we keep every strawberry warm during the day and cold during the night to ensure they develop the sweetest flavour. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now, if you don't mind, the strawberries are sleeping. Tesco, every little helps.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after seven on Thursday, July the 31st. Coming up in this hour, unity among the Arab world. Nations get together calling on Hamas to disband, surrender control of Gaza and allow free and fair elections. That would be a step forward, they say. Meanwhile, condemnation of the position taken by the United Kingdom will cover both those aspects. In other news, a verdict in part on the so-called Manchester Airport brawl.
A man has been found guilty of assaulting two female police officers at Manchester Airport last year, but the jury were unable to reach verdicts on all counts. I'm LBC's Liam Gotting at Liverpool Crown Court.
Britain's biggest police force to double the use of live facial recognition. Many people say that in the world of crime fighting, this is a major advance. Others, of course, question the matter of civil liberty. Commissioner of the Met, Sir Mark Rowley, told LBC...
We're investing further in facial recognition so we can do more operations that drag wanted offenders off the street. Regardless of being in tough times, we're going to put officers and time where it matters most.
The government considered plans to expand Heathrow Airport. This, of course, as one has to say, not so much Heathrow yesterday, but thousands of people were inconvenienced in airports such as Gatwick and Manchester. But you'll hear from the businessman who says we can have a shorter runway, we don't need to spend £60 billion, and we don't need to dig up the M25. Seems to make sense. You'll also hear from Nigel Farage, but far more importantly, your opportunity to put your calls to the leader of Reform UK. And on a sad note, we have to say farewell to a true star maker. Young behind stars such as Amy Winehouse, Dua Lipa and even a Spice Girl has died. Age 86 will have a full appreciation of an extraordinary career.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Now, overnight, as you've already heard on news bulletins, Canada has become the third G7 country to say it is ready to recognise a Palestinian state. There are conditions attached, by the way, not least is the idea of elections. Talk more about that. The decision comes after France and the UK have also backed the move, again, with conditions. Here, speaking overnight, is Canada's Prime Minister, Mark Carney.
This intention is predicated on the Palestinian Authority's commitment to much-needed reforms, including commitments by the Palestinian Authority's President Abbas to fundamentally reform its governance, to hold general elections in 2026 in which Hamas can play no part, and to demilitarize the Palestinian state.
While now there is no, and there should be no, league table of suffering, it is worth hearing what Emily Damari, the British-Israeli woman held hostage by Hamas for more than a year, thinks. Well, she's condemned the British position, Sir Keir Starmer. She says it risks rewarding terror and sends a dangerous move that violence earns legitimacy. She was released from captivity earlier this year, having been held in a cage. And she says, by legitimising a state entity, while Hamas still controls Gaza and continues its campaign of terror, you are not promoting a solution, you are promoting the conflict. Recognition under these conditions emboldens extremists and undermines any hope for genuine peace. Shame on you, says Emily Damari. Well, in a moment we'll be seeking someone who lost family members in that attack, that murderous attack of October the 7th, but reaction, or condemnation actually, continues to grow. Now, I put some of the claims that Sir Keir's position is rewarding Hamas to Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander, if you were listening yesterday morning. She says that was not fair.
This is not a reward for Hamas. Hamas is a vile terrorist organisation that has committed appalling atrocities. This is about the Palestinian people. It's about those children that we see in Gaza who are starving to death, and it's about their parents who, when they try and get their hands on the meagre amount of food that is making its way into the country, are actually being shot and killed. We've got to ratchet up pressure on the Israeli government to lift the restrictions to get aid back in to Gaza, and we've got to find a way to achieve this two-state solution. The actions of the Israeli government in the last couple of months have made that prospect look further and further away, and we can't allow that to happen.
Now, let's speak with someone for whom this conversation is all too personal. Steve Brisley joins me now. Mr. Brisley, your family were devastated by those murderous events of October the 7th. Do you mind my asking you to tell the listeners who you lost and who was taken hostage? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, my 48-year-old big sister, Leanne, and my 16-year-old niece, Noya, my 13-year-old niece, Yahel, were shot and killed in the hallway outside Yahel's bedroom on the 7th of October, just after my brother-in-law, Eli Sharabi, had been taken hostage. He was held for 491 days in the terror tunnels in Gaza and was released in February. But Eli's brother, Yossi, who died in captivity in January 2024, his body remains in captivity in Gaza.
My heart goes out to you, and thank you for putting it in such almost journalistic terms. What were the conditions in which your brother-in-law was held?
Horrendous. For around about 440, 450 of the days, he was held in two or three different tunnels underneath Gaza, up to 50 metres below ground. His legs were chained with metal chains throughout his captivity. His hands were often tied or chained as well. He survived on half or at best one pitta each day. Dirty water, no sanitation, and was subject to psychological and physical beatings.
Well, few people then are mercifully as personally involved as you are. Your reaction to the stance as outlined earlier this week by Sir Keir Starmer?
Well, I think all of us who have got this person linked to it were shocked. We were slightly ambushed by it. We had no indication that this statement was going to come out. And I've spent some time with the Prime Minister on several occasions and have spoken to him, man to man, not politicians. Mm-hmm. I know he's a family man, and he seemed very impacted by my family story. I would like to think that this statement is a misstep and a hurriedly written statement that has not meant to come across as it has. But how it has come across to us is that it is setting conditions for Israel, conditions that are predicated on Hamas having to agree to things that they will not agree to. And it does appear to us that that no such conditions have been put onto Hamas.
But
and
then,
so that it incentivizes them.
OK, and without wishing in any way to be confrontational, because that's not appropriate, but if Hamas won't agree to them, respectfully, Mr. Brisby, why would you be concerned? Because then the UK won't go down that path. Can I at least put that to you without being, too confrontational or direct?
No, of course. I mean, I think for me, I say this as the brother of a murdered sister and the uncle of murdered nieces, that for me, this has always begun and will end with the hostages. Hamas can bring this to an end by releasing the hostages. And all that we're really asking for is that any condition is always, the first condition is always the release of the hostages. Yossi's body, there's also Avinatan Orr, whose British mother I've spent some time with. These are people that need to be released before anything else can be discussed.
Do you honestly believe, sir, that Israel, the IDF, would stop if the hostages and the bodies were released? You're absolutely sound on that, are you?
I think that the international community will ensure that that peace will progress in some way, shape or form. But I can't see that any sort of peace can possibly be built on the backs of the hostages.
Overnight, Canada is another country. Again, I have to say, Canada is another country that says it's getting ready. When you hear this, what is your innermost feelings, as it would appear more of the world comes round to recognising Palestine, in a sense, some would say, rewarding Hamas?
I mean, I think all of us hostage families have always tried to steer as clear of the politics of all of this as possible. It's always been about people, about family, about relatives and loved ones for us. It's not really for me to comment in any great way on the future of Palestine and the political machinations that will bring to that. My primary concern is that the 20 or so hostages that remain alive, as we understand it, and the 30 bodies that remain are returned for a dignified burial. Now, that can, everything else can flow from that. If that happened today, then everything else will naturally flow from that, and Israel will be placed in a position by the international community where they have no option but to progress with peace and stop the war. But without the hostages being released, I don't see any way that can reasonably be asked for.
Final question. What is your view of Hamas?
I mean, I try not to keep hate in my heart. I try to think about what my sister and my nieces and Yossi have given me, not what Hamas have taken away from me. But what is clear is that they are a terrorist organisation which cannot be allowed to continue to hold civilian hostages, which is a war crime and a crime against humanity. And they cannot have any part in the future of Gaza and Palestine. That much is clear, and that has to be achieved. And the first step towards that is the immediate and unconditional release of the hostages.
Mr. Brisby, my thanks and my condolences to you, and thank you for sharing so much. Steve Brisby lost his sister, lost his nieces. Brother-in-law was taken hostage. 7:14, listening, Mark Seddon, who's director at the Centre for UN Studies at the University of Buckingham and was a speechwriter and communications advisor for the then UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, joining me now. Thank you for coming on, Mr. Seddon. Should recognition be conditional? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, it's coming 78 years after UN Resolution 181 was passed, partitioning what was Palestine. So Israel has been recognised all of that time. Palestine hasn't, by a small number of countries. I mean, there's 147 countries recognise Palestine now, the state of Palestine. Another eight are about to do so, including France, UK, and Canada. My own view is that, no, it shouldn't be conditional, because this is really a long... We have the whole... The key to all of this is ending this conflict once and for all.
Yes.
Many people may not think that a two-state solution is perfect, but that's the settled will of the international community.
But the international community...
And we just have to get there. And just on the hostages, Nick, nobody can... I'm listening to that. I mean, nobody can fail to be moved to try and appreciate how people have had to struggle to survive. But I would say this, that had the ceasefire been adhered to by Netanyahu and not been broken in March, they would most likely be released by now. And I think the quid pro quo for all of this is the fact that Israel detains thousands of Palestinians without trial. So all of this has got to be wrapped up in some final settlement, and that's the key thing.
You'll be aware that some of Britain's most prominent lawyers are warning the Prime Minister that his idea or his pledge concerning Palestine breaks international law, not least the so-called Montevideo Convention of 1933, because for a state to be recognised, it has to have a settled government, and you'll be aware that the Palestinian area currently has two. So they can't do it anyway, can they?
Yes, of course they can.
Convention.
When Britain was in charge of the mandate for Palestine... We should have held an election in 1948, and there should have been an independent state. This is what happened with countries right across the British Empire. Now, the fact of the matter is that most countries in the world recognise Israel and they recognise Palestine. We're now the outliers, and I'm sorry, but you know. We constantly hear from countries saying, oh, UN mandate, all the resolutions are anti-Israel. But look, Resolution 181 partitioned Palestine between Israel and Palestine. And most of the world recognises Israel, but still we have no state of Palestine. There has to be a two-state solution. Right. Otherwise, this just goes on and on and on.
And nobody wants that. I must leave it there. Mr. Seddon, thank you. I'm already late to the news. My apologies. Mark Seddon, thank you. You're director at the Centre for UN Studies at the University of Buckingham. You were a speechwriter and communications advisor for the then UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. It's already 7:17. Let's take your views on that. Not least, of course, in the light of what we've heard from a survivor and a family member who lost a family who lost so many members of his relatives in that. 7:17, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Airlines are demanding answers from the air traffic control provider NATS after another major technical problem. Heathrow is due to submit its proposal for a third runway after years of delays. And Canada's become the third G7 country to say it will recognise a Palestinian state. LBC weather. Heavy thundery showers across the south, cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. On the M25, two lanes are closed because of an accident anti-clockwise at Junction 14 for Heathrow, with delays to the M4. Two lanes are closed on the M40 due to an accident northbound from Junction 6 for Watlington to Junction 8A for Oxford services. In High Wycombe, a lane is closed on the A404 southbound from the M40 Junction 4 for Handy Cross roundabout to Marlow Junction. That's again because of an accident. The M11 is stop-start southbound before Junction 4 for the A4 406 North Circular Road. And there are severe delays on the Northern Line northbound between Kennington and Camden Town due to a points failure, and minor delays on the District Line between Turnham Green and Ealing Broadway.
This is LBC.
What makes a steak beautifully tender? Well, there's a secret ingredient. Patience. At Tesco, we mature our finest Aberdeen Angus sirloin steaks for 35 days. You see, the longer we wait, the more deliciously tender they become. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now we just sit back and wait. For 35 days. Tesco. Every little helps. Available in selected larger stores.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app.
Download it from your App Store now.
With UK Export Finance, I'm fulfilling more export orders from around the world with working capital support.
Export insurance means I'll get paid when exporting to challenging markets.
At UK Export Finance, we believe no viable UK export should fail for lack of finance or insurance. Between 2023 and 2024, we provided £8.8 billion of government-backed trade finance to support UK exports. Learn how we could help you win export contracts, fulfil orders and get paid. Search UK Export Finance today.
Today's the day. The day that Jim feels he can't carry on. Unable to see beyond his problems. His pain unbearable. So thankfully today, he reached out to us. Samaritans. And that could save Jim's life. Leave a gift in your will to Samaritans and support people who are struggling to carry on. Help us save lives today, tomorrow, always. To find out how, search Samaritan's Wills.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after 7, Matt, you're going to be the first call. I'll quickly tell you some of the headlines. Not all of them, just a quick summary. A lot of them go with the same story we're leading with, actually. The Daily Mail, shame on you, Starmer. The Times, the aspect I just discussed. Palestine vow breaks the law, say top lawyers. And the front page of the I newspaper. UK plan to get aid trucks into Gaza. Starmer joins allies in new warning to Israel. The other big story, which we're going to discuss in just a few moments, is the problem at airports. Some of it Heathrow, a lot of it Gatwick, Manchester and other airports. And we're discussing that in more detail. Air We Go Again is the front page of The Sun. It does appear we have an extraordinary number of problems with flight control. Heathrow chaos to bring days of delays, says the Daily Telegraph. I want to stress again, it's Heathrow is not alone in this instance, although it is alone, of course, in this interesting idea that they went today. The government will start considering plans for a third runway, including one from a businessman who says, we doesn't need to be as long, we don't need to dig up the N25, and it doesn't need to cost as much. You'll hear from Surinder Arora on that later in the show. The front page of the LBC app is airlines demanding answers, which seems fair. It's thought around 150 flights were grounded, many of which were then cancelled, thousands of people inconvenienced, and one other news website at random. Here we are. The Independent has photographs of the family saying farewell to Ozzy Osbourne, his widow now, Sharon. She looks desperately racked with emotion and heartache there, comforted by her children, and it would appear half of Birmingham turned out. So a fitting farewell to that rock legend as he was. To your calls, Matt's in Birmingham. Matt, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I just got a quick question.
Oh, Lord.
I've got no one else to ask, so I thought I'd ring you.
Go on, then.
We've had...
Ask Chris Tarrant, I suppose. You're gone.
He's offered me 50-50.
Found a friend, yeah. Right, what's the question? Here we go.
My question is...
Yeah.
The world is talking about a two-state solution.
Mm-hmm.
Has been for many more years than we care to think about.
Yep.
My question now is... Who is on the other side of the two-state solution? Obviously, you have, in theory, you've got Israel on one side of that two-state solution.
Yes.
You have the majority of the world calling for it. Following the events following October the 7th and what is left in that region / geographical area.
Yeah.
Who is left on the other side of that two-state solution?
What
I'm getting at is we don't have... that I'm aware of.
Well, someone's got to give up land. As I always say when we discuss the two-state solution, God can't make more land. Yeah, God can't make more land, so...
Quite right.
Yeah.
But that's not my question. My question is, everybody is accepting of in inverted commas, there has to be a two-state solution. Obviously, the question of whether
I think
can happen or not.
Undoubtedly the majority of thought.
Right,
yes.
So who is on the other side? What people, what populace, what entities are on the other side requesting and calling for it and asking to be... either the first or second state in that two-state solution, because the last time people were asked in the region what they wanted, we got Hamas.
Right.
We haven't had a population of Palestine ask that question in recent years. And I'm just genuinely wondering...
Do you not think they would want that, the people in Gaza?
I have no idea. And what I'm pointing out is I haven't seen any evidence in any of the media anywhere that actually backs up that there is a sufficient populace in the region that wants that outcome. It just struck me literally this morning listening to you.
Okay.
The world is accepting that that is the desired outcome, and I'm questioning whether it's the desired outcome for the majority of the world or whether it's the desired outcome for a specific populace in that region.
Well, yours is a very good point. It probably has been taken as a given. And to your point, you have to add, of course, Hamas doesn't believe in a two-state solution. Hamas believes in the eradication of Israel.
Well, on an ideological basis, there simply cannot be a two-state solution, and anybody with critical thinking skills understands that. But my question really does come down to, you watch all media outlets, mm-hmm. all media outlets, and all presenters, any commentators, they start from a position of the desired outcome being a two-state solution.
It's something, the next time I speak to an expert in the field, where is the evidence that that's what people want? I would imagine they would say, well, look at the life they've got now. Anything has to be better than, in some instances, seeming to be starved to death without medical supplies. Matt, I have to move on. Thank you for your kind words. Have yourself a safe day. 7:25, back to this in a moment. John, you'll be the next caller. But let's pick up on that other big story. And it's on the OBC News Bulletin, quite rightly. Flights across the UK grounded, dozens cancelled, thousands of people inconvenienced after another air traffic control failure. One passenger was Boris.
I have a 40-minute drive ahead of me at the other end, and I'm not sure whether or not the car rental company that I'm using is even going to be open by the time we land.
No, not that Boris. That Boris is trying to get from London Heathrow to Pisa in Italy. Airlines are demanding answers from air traffic control provider NATS, or air traffic control as we know it, over this glitch that caused chaos yesterday. Dara Brady, Director of Communications for Ryanair, says...
All of this could be avoidable. You know, the infrastructure needs investment, and if Martin isn't going to do the job and fix it, well, then he should move over and let somebody else do it, frankly.
He being Chief Executive Martin Rolfe. Let's turn to Simon Calder, travel correspondent for The Independent, broadcaster and author. Simon, morning. First up, do we know what went wrong?
No, we don't, Nick. I've been trying to find out. Obviously, NATS rather playing it down. They said, oh, there's a technical issue affecting the rate at which flights can go into the Heathrow airspace, the London airspace, which, of course, is the busiest in the world, London being the world capital of aviation. In fact, that translated to everything being stopped on the ground and dozens of flights, particularly inbound to Heathrow and Gatwick, being diverted to Paris, Brussels, Frankfurt, Cologne, or indeed just returning to where they had started from. I'm counting over 150 cancellations yesterday, 15 fresh cancellations today. That spells tens of thousands of passengers waking up where they didn't intend to be, and with no clear explanation about what happened, nor indeed how they are going to get to their destination at a time of year where everything is at full stretch and, of course, people are emotionally invested in their holidays.
How fit for purpose is NATS?
Well, 99.99% of the time, it does a remarkable job because, of course, the UK has hugely constrained airspace. It's every day there's a kind of miracle of three-dimensional chess getting people where they need to be. But we saw 2 years ago the August bank holiday shutdown where, well, bluntly, the system and the main system and the backup system didn't like a particular detail on a flight plan and decided to shut themselves down. You will recall that the engineer on duty was actually at home and had to drive in to try and sort the problem. That went on for hours and caused thousands of cancellations. This was solved a little more quickly, but the government, the airlines, as you heard from Ryanair just now, absolutely demanding answers, and very little coming from NATS so far. I've obviously been trying to get more of an explanation from them. Extremely expensive for the airlines. This will cost them millions of pounds in lost revenue, in care costs for passengers, finding them hotels and alternative flights. And, of course, national embarrassment for the UK once again.
Lastly, on that point, the UK, noting what you say about just how busy the skies are above London and across the UK, we don't seem to hear of these problems so regularly in the United States, or I know in France it's normally because they go on strike. Is there an inherent problem with the British system?
Well, if you have the world's busiest single runway airport, Gatwick, and the busiest two runway airport, Heathrow, there is no slack in the system there. I mean, Gatwick, you have the gap between takeoffs and landings as little as 65 seconds. So you get a delayed domino effect. Everything unravels. And guess what? In the next 24 hours, Heathrow will be unveiling its extremely expensive plans to get a third runway. And they will basically, I think, be using this to say, well, we told you we need a new runway. We have to have that extra resilience to recover from a disruption like this. Of course, that's hugely controversial. And of course, the airlines, the passengers, don't want to pay for something which won't be ready for another 10 years.
Simon, as ever, thanks, buddy. Simon Calder, author, broadcaster, travel correspondent for The Independent. Staying with Heathrow matters, after the news.
The battle for Heathrow's future hots up as hotel billionaire unveils a rival bid to the airport's own plans for expansion. I'm Christian May from City AM, and I'll be discussing this story with Nick shortly.
And in the following hour, that's Christian May right after the news, in the following hour, we will speak with that businessman, Surinder Arora, and hear more of his plans for the third runway. At 7.30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. Let's get those news headlines. Thomas Watts.
Airlines are demanding answers from the air traffic control provider NATS after another technical glitch. NATS says it was a radar-related issue that was resolved quickly by switching to a backup system yesterday. Canada's become the third G7 country after France and the UK to lay out plans to recognise a Palestinian state. The Prime Minister, Mark Carney, says the move is dependent on certain conditions, including elections next year, with no role for Hamas. The Metropolitan Police is to more than double its use of controversial live facial recognition. The system, used to identify wanted offenders, will be deployed up to 10 times a week in London. LBC weather, heavy thundery showers across the south, quite cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees.
LBC.
For whoever they want to be in life, give them a great start with Well Kid. Carefully balanced, great-tasting vitamins and minerals for 4 to 12-year-olds with specific nutrients such as zinc and vitamin D, which support normal immune system function. The Well Kid range from Vitabiotics, from Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
With Little Plus Bakery Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free Little Bakery coupon on every shop. Download Little Plus and get at the Retail Industry Awards Supermarket of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability, ends 20th of August. Full T's and C's apply. See little.co.uk/spin.
Trying to Bedford with the crew for a music festival. Scenes.
Georgie, is this too much guitar?
Yep, lost them. But I offered to get drinks on my own.
It's okay, find the flag with the DJ and cat. Oh, there they are.
Back on the train, glitter gone, feet destroyed. Totally worth it. Oh, I can't wait to post this selfie of us.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save one third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply, see our website for full details.
Feel the thunder of hooves, the tension as they race past. Your heart in your chest, that split second of silence. Before the roar of the finish. That glorious Goodwood feeling. Qatar Goodwood Festival, presented by Visit Qatar, July 29th to August 2nd. Book now.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Apologies to John, you will be the next caller concerning developments regarding the recognition of Palestine, I promise, but that's after, as we always do around this time, 7.33, dive into the world of business finance through the eyes of Christian May, who's editor-in-chief at City AM, and his title has a powerful front page with a very exciting graphic, I imagine. Rival Heathrow bid takes off. Tell us more, who's behind the bid and what might it offer? Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, I mean, quite exquisite timing. We were putting together our front page on this rather sensational bid for the expansion of Heathrow from a billionaire hotel magnate, just as all the nation's planes were grounded. So we did have to sort of balance those two rather competing ideas. But Heathrow expansion is...
I bet that was met in the newsroom with, oh, gosh, this is a problem.
yeah, a little bit of a creative... I had to be quick because I had to get out to Wembley to see Oasis. basis last night. So some pretty quick decisions were made. But but look, Heathrow expansion has been such an ongoing story. The Transport Secretary, after the government confirmed they would support a bid to expand the hub airport, the Transport Secretary said they'd welcome bids from anywhere. So with that in mind, whilst we expect Heathrow's own bid to be formalised and announced possibly even later today, the Aurora Group, a hotel group, billionaire owner of that, has put together a very comprehensive-looking bid, which he says he can do for a lot less money and a lot quicker and without touching the M25. It's linked to ongoing rivalry around Heathrow. Surinder Arora is a supporter of Heathrow's critics in the airline industry who don't like the way Heathrow operates and has a monopoly over the various terminals. So it is bound up in that debate, which we've discussed before. Mm-hmm. But certainly, as you can see on our front page, they've put together at the very least quite a compelling image of what it would look like. But it is obviously going to be an extremely complicated and long process to even decide on the plans, let alone who's going to deliver them and let alone and when we might start seeing any construction work.
Well, with such busy business stories, some might say the editor-in-chief should have stayed at his desk rather than go to Oasis. But let's go... OK, he got it. Let's cross the Atlantic. The Fed and Trump, they're at loggerheads again.
Nick, as you know, editors always prioritise. the Fed, yes, gosh, Donald Trump, he's got some ammunition now in his long-running row with the US Central Bank. As you know, he's desperate for them to cut interest rates. They didn't yesterday. And that's despite the fact that the US economy appears to be going gangbusters. They're adding more jobs to the economy month on month than many people had expected. And the latest GDP figures show 3% growth. Can you imagine what this country would be like with 3% growth? I think we have to go back nearly 15 years to come to a figure like that. Anyway, Donald Trump has said, what are you waiting for? And the Fed has said, well, we're waiting to see what happens to inflation and we're waiting to see how these tariffs bite. But the tension there is palpable between the president and his central bank chief.
Staying with newspaper editors, which former editor, and he happened to be Chancellor too, could be in for quite a healthy payday?
Yeah, here's a career path to aspire to once you're done editing a London newspaper. George Osborne, who, among his many roles outside of government, took a partnership position at the boutique investment bank Robey Warshaw, one of the most successful businesses in the City of London, had their hand in almost every mega deal of the last decade or so. There's only a handful of them there, by the way, about four partners and some support staff, and they tend to share about 70 million quid a year between them. Osborne is a partner, relatively new one. The firm has been sold to US financial services giant Evercore for around 150 million quid, which means that their partners are going to share a pretty sizable pot, figures being bandied around of possibly up to £10 million for George Osborne himself, though one of the founding partners, Simon Robey, is probably in line for about 70 million quid.
And finally, who's crying foul over the Chancellor's tax raid, Christian?
Well, lots of people, and the latest person is Gary Neville, who you might remember played a starring role in a rather glittering video supporting Keir Starmer just ahead of the election. He remains a supporter of the Labour Party, but he was speaking to Sky News yesterday, in which you have to bear in mind he has a big hand now in the hospitality industry and hotels, etc., in Manchester and elsewhere, and he has taken aim at the business taxes that have been imposed on that sector. He says, I just don't believe that there's a rationale for making it more expensive to hire people, which is precisely what's happened with the national insurance rise. And he says that has held back growth. So it's another interesting voice among many criticising some of the tax decisions that this government has taken.
Christian, thanks. Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM, taking us to 7:38. John's in Seaford. John, your response to what we're hearing, the latest moves as regards the recognition of a Palestine. Morning.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to make some comments about the man that you had on. I think his name was Seddon or something.
Yes, Mark
Highly Seddon. Selective about the history of what's going on now.
Right.
Because in 1947, the United Nations adopted a resolution which would partition into a Jewish and an Arab state when the mandate came to an end in 1948. Of course, what happened then was the Mufti of Jerusalem and the five surrounding Arab nations attacked Israel, which ultimately led to the displacement of hundreds of thousands of Palestinian Arabs, and they all went into countries like Jordan. So, in effect, what he was saying was not factually correct. The Arab nations there would not accept Israel and tried to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. Therefore, what's happening now, of course, is 70 years of what occurred way back then, that the Arab nations, and now Hamas, will not accept an Israel state and will not accept Jews. So how on earth there can be a two-state solution?
Do you not think the Abraham Accord changed part of what you just said, John?
Well, yes, indeed, they did. And, of course, when you go back to the likes of Yasser Arafat, who stood there in Washington, I think it was with President Clinton, and signed agreements and then wouldn't keep to those agreements, which would have led to a probable two-state solution between the Arabs and Israel. But, of course, Yasser Arafat wouldn't accept that way back then, and, of course, it's never happened now. And
how significant is it that Qatar, Saudi Arabia and Egypt are among 17 nations signing a declaration over the last 36 hours demanding the dismantling of Hamas?
Well, of course, the Western countries, France, Macron and others, should accept and agree to that. What they're stating is right. They know, those Arab nations know, that there can be no agreements there while the likes of Hamas exist.
Grateful for your input, John. Thank you. We'll take more calls on that. It's 7:40 now. Let's go to... There are now some verdicts coming through in the so-called Manchester Airport brawl. We have to tread carefully because it is still a live, or there are still live proceedings going on, but let's pick up on what has been decided. Liam Gotting, LBC's North West reporter, cover the trial at Liverpool Crown Court, joins me now. Liam, what have we discovered?
Well, Nick, after 10 hours of deliberation over the last few days, the jury was called back into court yesterday and they told the judge that they hadn't been able to agree verdicts on all counts, but they had agreed verdicts on three of the four. 20-year-old Mohammed Fahir Amaz was found guilty of assaulting two female police officers, causing actual bodily harm to PC Lydia Ward. This is the body cam footage of the moment she was left bleeding and sobbing after being punched in the face during the brawl. Mohammed Fahir Amaz was also found guilty of assaulting a man in the airport Starbucks, which is what resulted in the police being called and led to the scenes we just heard there. However, the jury said they were not able to reach a verdict on count two, on which both Amaz and his older brother, Mohammed Ahmad, are accused of assaulting PC Marsden, causing him actual bodily harm. The judge asked if given more time, would the jurors be able to reach any verdict on count two? The jury said they would not be able to, and as a result, the jury has been discharged from this case. The prosecution, however, say there will be a retrial on count two, with Paul Greeny, the prosecution lawyer, telling the judge it is the intention of the Crown to seek a retrial of both defendants on count two. Exactly when that retrial will take place is yet to be decided, but for now, after a three-week trial, Mohammed Fahir Amaz has been found guilty of assaulting two female police officers at Manchester Airport last year. He was remanded in custody and will be sentenced after that retrial takes place.
Liam Gotting reporting, and please, all of you, I know you want to go, but listen to Liam's words, that there is a reconsideration of this case, so the proceedings are still live. I promise you, as and when we reach verdicts on all of the cases, we will, but we cannot get into a wide conversation about that now. Liam Gotting's report, 7:42. Coming to you, David, as the next caller. Let's get some of the social media and emails coming in on this. Steve says, the timing of this UK announcement makes no sense at all with the situation in Israel and Gaza. It will have no effect. It's a cynical move from Starmer to prop up failing Muslim support in the country for his party. Richard in Hampstead, how on earth can a government recognise a Palestinian state when Hamas controls the Gaza Strip? Hamas don't want a two-state solution. They want the final solution. It's written in their charter. David's in South Woodford. David, what's the significance of some Arab nations calling for Hamas to be disbanded, dismantled? Good morning.
I think now is the time to put pressure on Hamas, absolutely. But I think Netanyahu also wants a final solution, in that he's referred to the Palestinians as Amalek, which in the Jewish Torah mandates that the Jewish people kill everyone who's part of that community. And also, can I just add, people say Hamas don't want Israel, which is correct. But
they don't like it. I mean, they want it wiped off the face of the earth, David.
Well, yeah, that is some of the things they've said. But the Likud party charter does not allow, says there will be no other sovereignty apart from Israeli sovereignty between the Mediterranean Sea and the Jordan. So they don't want to allow it either. So they're both...
Both parties, but when I say parties, both organisations or one government, they need to review where they are, don't they? If this is ever going to be solved, both of them have to look to themselves now.
And we need to put pressure on Hamas, but the pressure needs to be put on the Israeli government. And if I can just say one more thing.
And what would that pressure look like? Sorry. What would that pressure look like? You say we need to put pressure. What does that pressure look like? What do you mean?
I'll tell you what. We need to break off, for example, the UK. We need to stop all arms. We need to stop our MPs being funded by Israel to visit Israel just in May.
Well, no, hold on. MPs are funded to go to Israel, China, the Caribbean, Australia, Brazil. That's how they find out what's going on, David.
Well, not when their leaders are wanted by the ICJ. Okay, our MPs are going standing and being protocols.
Okay, we need to say that, of course, the ICJ is also looking at the work of Hamas here, so just to prioritize.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. I don't... would many people say that Israel have overstepped? Yes, of course. Yes, of course they would, and it'd be a very valid concern. But normally, the way to keep something on side is you stay friendly, you stay with an ally rather than cutting off all links. I don't know what's to be achieved by going that far, but David, I've enjoyed our conversation. Thank you. Coming up after the news, you'll be hearing from the government about a crackdown on late payments. That could be interesting if you're running a business. Then later in the show...
So, Mr. Kyle, can I have an apology, please?
That's Reform UK leader Nigel Farage demanding an apology after the use of language likening his stance to that of Jimmy Savile. And then in the last hour, we say farewell to a true star maker. Sylvia Young died aged 86. The woman behind stars such as Dua Lipa, you heard there, Amy Winehouse, David Tennant. It goes on and on and on, and we'll have an appreciation of that extraordinary Fame Academy that she ran. 7:45, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
The head of the UK's air traffic control provider is facing calls to resign over another major technical glitch. Heathrow is preparing to unveil its long-awaited plan for a third runway. Canada is to formally recognise a Palestinian state alongside France and the UK in September. LBC weather, heavy thundery showers across the south, quite cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. On the M25, two lanes are closed because of an accident anti-clockwise at Junction 14 for Heathrow, with delays to Maple Cross. The M25 is also blocked clockwise on an exit slip road due to a broken down vehicle at Junction 6 for Godston. A lane is blocked in Limehouse on the A1203 Limehouse Link Tunnel eastbound after Butcher Row. That's again due to a broken down vehicle. In Beckton, High Street North is closed in both directions because of a police investigation. That's between the A124 Barking Road and Kempton Road. And there are flight cancellations from Heathrow and Gatwick airports following a technical fault last night. And there are minor delays on the district line between Turnham Green and Ealing Broadway.
This is LBC.
At your local Boots Pharmacy, you can manage your prescriptions in the most convenient way for you. So you can get text updates when your prescription is in and ready for you to collect. Or you can have them delivered straight to your door. And with Boots, you can always pop in store for expert advice from a friendly Boots pharmacist.
Hello, how can we help?
It's easy to switch your prescriptions to Boots today. Boots, with you for life. Participating surgeries, prescription and delivery charges may apply, subject to availability.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Have I won a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
So, where are we going?
You wanted to try something new? Well, we're here.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event.
I booked a test drive in the all-new Insta online. It's the 2025 World Electric Vehicle winner, and we save £500 if we order before the 31st of August.
Ooh, very stylish.
Oh, and it's Hyundai, by the way.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event. Are you in?
18 plus UK retail customers only. Excludes Motability. Registered by 30th of September. T's and C's apply.
When we're little, we don't overthink things. We're brave, confident. We laugh and ask questions.
And play.
And play. So why stop there? Just because we're adults, it shouldn't mean we stop trying new things. For me, starting a career in early years has meant not just a new job, but new skills, new friends.
Like me.
Yes, and a new sense of purpose. All that, and I can earn while I learn.
Yay, painting next.
Do something big. Work with small children. Search early years careers to find out more.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Well, we've got 11 minutes before 8 o'clock to remind you, Nigel Farage, the leader of Reform UK here, taking your calls at 8. But the call now is from Naji in Hendon to talk about the British action, now possibly joined by Canada, as regards the recognition of a Palestinian state. Hello, Naji. What do you have to say?
Hi, good morning, Nick. I think when Heidi Alexander was talking about it not being a reward for Hamas but for the Palestinian people, I think if she knew that were at all true, ultimately, she wouldn't have applied. She would have applied conditions on Hamas in order to, you know, get them to be recognised or to get Palestine to be recognised as a state. Instead, Hamas can just sit there knowing they've done nothing. She also could have just conditioned it against, you know, she wouldn't have had to make it a condition of ending the war in Gaza. You know, ultimately, Hamas have no conditions here. Israel have every condition that they need to fulfill, and Hamas can just sit by knowing they have to do nothing, but they can actually make Israel's compliance with these conditions even more difficult.
What should the UK government's stance be on this, Naji?
Well, for it to be kind of more logically consistent, it would have had to have done what Macron and Carney have done. And I don't agree with those two decisions, by the way. But they seem far more prepared to recognise a Palestinian state with conditions applied upon the leadership of the Palestinians, where it seems that the UK has reversed that situation in order to try and sound a bit more sophisticated. And the result is that by applying conditions on Israel instead, they end up seeing pretending they look very clever, but actually ending up looking, you know, far more like this has been far more badly thought out.
What conditions do you think we should apply?
Oh, well, first of all, Hamas can't be there, and I don't understand the idea that Hamas can just be magicked away, vanished away.
But you're right, then there can only be, for a state to be recognised according to the Montevideo Convention of 1933, I've said this so many times, there has to be one recognised government. Well, currently there are two, and you would have thought that the Prime Minister might be aware of that as a former barrister.
Oh, completely. I was going to get onto that and to say that those two territories are currently ruled by an entity that the UK's own government calls terrorists, and a corrupt entity that pays the salaries of what the government calls terrorists, the Palestinian Authority, where Mahmoud Abbas is sitting the 24th year of his four-year term. So both of those governing entities need to have conditions snapped on them, not Israel. It makes absolutely no logical or rational sense for Israel to be the one to comply with conditions for the Palestinians to get a state.
40 days to go to so-called D-Day for the British government if recognition does go ahead. No indication from Israel that it is going to meet any of the conditions that you said. What should UK do in 40 days?
I really don't know, because they've got themselves into this mess.
Well, they really haven't they? They've backed themselves into a very tight corner.
Well, ultimately, if Israel comply with all but one, then the current situation is, the current situation seems to be that the UK would go ahead and recognise Palestine, because it hasn't obviously complied with all of the conditions. And then that leaves a very dangerous prospect that it's recognised Palestine with Hamas in power. And this is why the UK government had the opportunity yesterday to clarify and to say, are you sure this is the, you know, the conditions that you're placing are on Israel and none whatsoever on Hamas?
Naji, grateful for your time. I have to end there because I have the opportunity to speak to a government minister. Thank you. 7 minutes before 8 is the time. Now, I've told you so many times before how important so-called small businesses, SMEs, are in this country. They employ. I know we obviously think of these giant employers like the car firms and, I don't know, the health service, but 60% of the country's workforce is employed by small and medium-sized enterprises, and they generate, get ready for this, knocking on to £3 trillion in turnover. But there are problems. Simple ones. Getting paid. And now the government is determined to try and do something about it. Gareth Thomas is a Labour MP and Minister for Services, Small Businesses and Exports. What are you and your colleagues announcing today? Good morning, Minister.
Good morning, Nick. We're publishing today our plan for small businesses, setting out a range of measures, in particular, as you rightly allude to, on late payments. It's the most significant package for 25 years in terms of new powers for the Small Business Commissioner, maximum payment terms for large businesses to, in terms of their payments to small businesses, the prospect of significant fines if large companies continue not to treat their small businesses properly. I mean, the extraordinary situation is about 38 businesses a day go to the wall because of late payments by bigger businesses, and we have to end that if we want to see growth taking place in our country.
So what's the stick?
About 11 billion.
What are you going to do, Minister? Okay, Minister. Let's say I'm running a big business, right, and I'm not paying my smaller business, my cleaning company, whatever it might be. What's the stick that you're going to threaten me with?
So first of all, we're formally consulting today on measures that will bring in maximum payment terms. So if you don't meet those maximum payment terms, that you would be you could be investigated by the Small Business Commissioner and potentially face significant fines.
What's a significant fine? How much is that?
It will be linked to the company's record. In terms of whether they have a history of a poor payment, if it's just an oversight, obviously it's different. But we're wanting to give a range of options to the Small Business Commissioner depending on performance. Right. I hope the fact that we're announcing these measures today will actually incentivize larger companies to do the right thing. There are right. many large companies who do the right thing, and for example, signed up to the Fair Payment Code we launched last year, which rewards effectively companies that do the right thing. So I hope these measures won't be necessary, but okay. we need to have them in place so that we can act.
Minister, you referenced the number of companies that are having to close. You'll be aware, 2,718 companies shut down between January and March this year, the first quarter. That's the highest number of any year since 2021. What are you doing? Why aren't you helping small businesses more? Why are they failing on your watch?
Well, we're taking a series of steps to improve the economy.
Not for these businesses.
We've had a situation over the last decade of completely stagnant growth in our country, and we're not going to be able to turn that round at a flick of a switch. But we have, for example, published our industrial strategy to drive growth in eight key sectors.
How will growth
be
helped by the national insurance hike?
Well, on the national insurance hike, we took difficult decisions to invest in public services. That, for example, will pay for extra funding to our police to crack down, for
small
example,
business,
on the shoplifting.
Minister, small business, do you support the insurance, the NI hike?
I do, because it will, for example, help to invest in the police that businesses on the high street are desperate to see take action against shoplifters and those who are responsible for antisocial behaviour in our high streets.
Right.
Many small businesses need staff who are unwell to get treated more quickly in the NHS. And so the difficult decisions we took in the budget last October will help to improve our public services, and that does help small businesses too.
OK, Minister, in your portfolio last year is also exports. I don't need to tell you that the British airports from Manchester down to Gatwick experienced major problems. How fit for purpose is NATS? What will the government be looking at? What questions will they be asking today?
Well, first of all, Nick, if I may, any of your listeners who were waiting to get on a plane yesterday and their plane was cancelled, I completely understand their frustration. If they are still not sure whether there's a plane going out that they can get on today, I hope they'll get in touch with their airline carrier.
Okay, that's the airline. What about the government? What questions are you going to ask of NATS?
So on NATS specifically, the Transport Secretary has asked for an urgent meeting with the chief executive of NATS, because we need to understand what has happened. 2 years ago, there was a much bigger problem, and a number of measures were taken. Clearly, they weren't enough. We need to understand what exactly went wrong yesterday.
Okay, and I will leave it there. Thank you for your time, Gareth Thomas, talking about this new initiative to make sure the bills are paid on time. Your Minister for Small Businesses and Exports, the early news bulletin, 1 minute before 8. Nigel Farage after the news. Headlines now on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, there are fresh calls for the UK's air traffic control chief to resign over another technical glitch. Hundreds of flights were delayed after the NATS system went down for about 20 minutes yesterday afternoon. NATS has apologised, but Ryanair says its chief executive needs to go. Travel expert Simon Calder's told Nick it's not clear exactly what happened.
I'm counting over 150 cancellations yesterday, 15 fresh cancellations today. That spells tens of thousands of passengers waking up where they didn't intend to be and with no clear explanation about what happened, nor indeed how they are going to get to their destination at a time of year where everything is at full stretch.
Ministers say they're working closely with NATS to investigate. Heathrow's owner is due to come forward with its long-awaited plan for a third runway. Ministers who want work on the expansion to begin by 2030 are also expected to look at rival proposals. They include a blueprint for a shorter runway from the hotel tycoon Surinder Arora. Canada has become the latest G7 country to lay out plans to recognise a Palestinian state. The Prime Minister, Mark Carney, says the move is conditional on the Palestinian Authority's commitment to democratic reforms. It follows similar moves by the UK and France. Israel's Foreign Affairs Minister, Sharon Haskell, says it sends the wrong message to Hamas.
When Hamas hear that his refusal is being rewarded from the international community with declaration like they will receive a state, it seems like they are being rewarded.
The Metropolitan Police is to more than double its use of live facial recognition. The controversial system used to identify wanted offenders will be deployed up to 10 times a week in London. Heavy rain, lightning and hail are forecast to hit large parts of the south of England this morning. A Met Office yellow warning for thunderstorms is due to come into force at 10. And the latest audience figures show LBC remains the UK's leading commercial radio news talk brand. 3.4 million people are now tuning in every week. And thank you, because 1.4 million are now choosing Nick Ferrari at breakfast to start their day. In the city, the FTSE 100 is just reopening at 91.36. It closed unchanged last night. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 16. LBC weather, there's heavy thundery showers developing in the south, quite cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. TNCs apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call and WhatsApp message now 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Morning to you, 2 minutes after eight on Thursday, July the 31st. Your opportunity to put your calls and your questions to a man who's rarely out of the headlines. Nigel Farage, leader of Reform UK, is in the studio with me. And the questions are already piling in. But, Mr. Farage, welcome. Thank you for
coming.
Good
morning.
Good to see you. I'm going to handle the first question, if I may, because you're a broadcaster. You know that there are legal sensitivities here. There are still ongoing legal matters. There could even be a fresh case. But there is a political row going on over the so-called Manchester Airport brawl. The Conservatives are saying that the Home Secretary sided with the attacker. We can now say that. There are also some Labour MPs who made some rather disparaging comments about police activities. Again, watching the legal niceties. Mr. Farage, do you have a view?
Very much so. Last summer, you know, it was a difficult summer. Southport, the Manchester incident. I don't think this case would even be in court if Richard Tyson and I hadn't threatened to take a private prosecution. This is where two tier comes from. You know, this incident happens at Manchester Airport, and months and months and months and months go by. Southport happens, and a woman with a previously wonderful record within days is in court and gets 31 months in prison. So I'm pleased it's happening. Without going into the case at all,
yeah,
there are two police officers who were involved in that incident who are still under investigation by the IOPC, the Police Complaints Procedure. And no wonder the Conservatives and others are saying what they are, because it does appear that over all of this, that the Home Secretary effectively did take sides.
And so that's a grave misstep by Vet Cooper.
It is, and I think this was the beginning. As I say, if you put this together with what happened at Southport and the reactions to both and what was said by both, you can understand why two-tier care has really taken off.
Much, thank you. Much to discuss. First up, Keith in Victoria. You're through to Nigel Farage. Go ahead, Keith. Morning.
Good morning, Nick. Good morning, Nigel.
Morning.
Would reform recognise a Palestinian state? And if so, under what conditions on the ground and conditions in general be for that to happen?
Nicely put. Nigel Farage.
Yeah, Keith, hi. Well, I suppose it'd be quite useful if the Palestinian state, run by Hamas, didn't want to obliterate Israel and kill all its people. You can't recognise a Palestinian state at this moment in time whilst Hamas, a terrorist organisation dedicated in their own charter to wiping Israel off the face of the map, exists. So, no, it would be wrong. And I do wonder sometimes whether we've all forgotten what happened on October the 7th. And the fact that Hamas said afterwards they'd do it again and again and again. And none of this, of course, is to praise what Netanyahu's done and what is happening in Gaza. Long term, Keith, long term, if we had an Israeli and Palestinian state coexisting, respecting the rights of the others to exist, a sort of Abraham Accords, you know, that stretched across the whole region, then fine. But to do it now is wrong. It rewards terrorism. And Starmer, well, of course, he said he wouldn't recognise Palestine, which is why, of course, he is, because he U-turns on everything, and because the left of British politics is screaming for him to do so. It is leadership from Starmer that lacks any sense, frankly, of morality.
So how does the suffering stop, Mr. Farage?
Well, I don't think it does right now, but I do think...
We allow them to continue to stop.
No. I mean, look, the only people that can broker a peace are... I mean, you know, it's America. Mm. America is the only country that can do this. America is Israel's closest ally in every sense. Now, I know there are, of course, a lot of other conflicts going on around the world, but it's only America that can do it. But I'm sorry, you know, think back to Northern Ireland. Think back to, you know, those of us of our age can remember decades of this. The only reason that we actually got a settlement in Northern Ireland, and that it's a much better place now than it was, is that both sides agreed, right, okay, we actually want a peace deal. And the point is that Hamas doesn't want a peace deal. It wants to keep going.
Do you think Israel wants peace, Mr. Farage?
Well, ultimately, I mean, if you know, of course. I mean, as I say, we don't support what many of the Israeli actions, but the idea that Israel wants a genocide, I just don't buy that. I don't believe that for any moment. I think actually the boot's on the other foot.
And lastly on this, some would say that Sakir has moved himself into a very tight corner, because if Israel were to recognise all the conditions or meet all the requirements, then presumably the British government would say, well, actually, now we don't recognise a Palestinian state, which either you do or you don't.
Well,
you can't be a bit pregnant.
Yeah, but of course some of those conditions are so subjective that you can decide whether they have or haven't met them. A ceasefire, of course, is clear. That's easy. I was just very struck that more demands were being made of Israel than were being made of this prospective new Palestinian state.
All right. Keith, thank you. Natalie's in Sutton. Natalie, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. Good morning, Nigel.
Good morning.
A couple of quick questions about your relationship with Donald Trump. It was very well publicised how pally you guys were. Where's that relationship kind of stand now? There doesn't seem to be so much about it being said. Also, I was just wondering, like, with... if you had any advice, or would you handle anything differently in your relationship with Trump? If you had any advice for Keir Starmer as to how he would kind of be dealing with him? And just quickly, wondering if you were invited up to Scotland for a quick round.
A catch up with Donald Trump. Natalie, thank you. Nigel Farage.
Natalie, last year when Trump came to Scotland in May, he literally came to play golf. And I went up and met him and Eric. and I stayed over. I think I stayed in a Tom Watson suite, and he stayed in a Jack Nicklaus suite, and we had a great time. But that was different. That was a social visit. This time he was coming. Really what he was doing was getting the politics out of the way before the state visit in September, so that the state visit is a state visit without too much politics. Quite clever, actually, the way that he did it. And given that the Prime Minister is in negotiations with America on trade deals and much else, I don't think me bowling up at that moment would diplomatically, frankly, have worked. So it's as simple as that.
You were diplomatically stayed away.
Of course.
Nigel Farage can do diplomacy.
It's impossible, though, isn't it? You know, he is in negotiations with Starmer. If I'm appear to be anywhere near the place and those trade negotiations don't end up the way people want, it will all be my fault.
Did he contact you and say, sorry, I'm in the country, I can't say hi, Nigel?
He didn't, but others did. The advice for Starmer... Yeah, what you got to do, Keir, is you got to cut taxes, you got to drill for North Sea oil, you got to get tough on crime and stop the boats. I mean, it was almost like Trump was saying vote reform. I mean, it was quite funny.
You reference the president's visit. Should he be afforded the same honour that was given to Emmanuel Macron to address?
Well, I mean, you know, when Macron came a few weeks ago, it was like a conquering hero. Open-top carriage rides with the king through Windsor, addresses in the Palace of Westminster to selected members of the House of Commons and the House of Lords. And with this, they're going to chuck Trump down in Windsor for a couple of days with the king. I mean, it's the contrast between the two is quite extraordinary.
Is it more two-tier kit?
Well, I think it really is. I mean, and of course, you know, Starmer... I mean, did you see Starmer's face when he was sitting down with Trump? I mean, he just looked like he did not want to be there for one moment. He looked deeply uncomfortable. But he's very lucky. Starmer is actually very lucky in this regard, that whilst his heart is deep in the middle of Brussels and the European Union, he's a prime minister benefiting from the fact we've got Brexit Britain. You know, he's able to do a deal with India. Trump, of course, you know, is rewarding us in a sense by not putting penalties on us the way he is on the European Union. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. And also, he's also lucky he's got an American president who emotionally is very close to the UK.
The Vice President, J.D. Vance, is coming through the UK. Will you be catching up with him, Mr. Farage?
We'll have to see.
I take that as a yes.
We'll have to see.
You're going to the Cotswolds?
We'll have to see.
Will you go to Jeremy Clarkson's pub?
Without a doubt.
just finally on President Trump, is Mayor Khan a horrible mayor, a nasty guy and a stupid guy?
I don't tend to get as personal as that. I let others attack me personally. I don't tend to return the favour. All I would say is that knife crime in London is up 58% since 2021. Something is going horribly wrong on London streets, and this guy has overseen it all.
You don't get personal. Herman Van Rompuy has all the charisma of a dump.
But that's teasing.
The unelected old men who run the European Union.
Fact. Hang on. Calling someone a damp rag is a tease.
Right.
It's not personal. I mean, I wasn't comparing him to a paedophile the way that a cabinet minister...
OK, Natalie, thank you for your call. We're coming on to Peter Kyle and likening your stance to that of Jimmy Savile.
Well, no, but calling me an enabler for people like Jimmy Savile. Absolutely appalling. I also thought, Nick, it was incredibly badly judged in this sense. That when Boris Johnson, 3 years ago, you know, accused Starmer and said, look, you know, you were the guy that could have prosecuted Jimmy Savile, you failed to do so. The levels of moral indignation that we got from Labour on this. How dare Johnson do this? And yet they use the Savile analogy with
the papers are reporting that this was authorised by Number 10.
I know.
That line.
Yes, I know. Which just
do you believe that?
I think they're losing the plot in every way, yes. I really do. And I think we're at a place where I think the PM in particular and others, they've become completely obsessed with me.
But why and would so, you not want online safety, Mr. Farage?
Oh, I do want online safety.
Because you're aware, in the last 3 years, 24% of 10 to 19-year-olds have taken their lives. 29% of those who have taken their lives. 43 young people have ended their lives because of influences they've had or images they've seen online. Why do you not want safety online?
I couldn't agree more. And you're right. It is those suicide sites that this legislation was intended to stop. Absolutely. But here's the problem. Number one, this legislation doesn't stop that because there are things called VPNs. Yeah. And it'll take you about, just pop your phone on, yeah. Within 45 seconds.
You'll LBC be on, did an investigation.
So that's the first problem. It doesn't actually deal with it, despite the best intentions. And if this legislation is designed to protect children, why under it are we setting up an elite police force to monitor what people say about illegal immigration and migrant hotels? Why already online are we seeing a speech from a Member of Parliament being censored? And by the way, why is it 16 and 17-year-olds now cannot connect with some news content directly, but they're going to get the vote?
So how would you seek to protect those vulnerable...
This legislation is the biggest threat to free, open debate and speech we've ever seen from a government.
You want safety online, don't you, Mr.
Yes,
Farage?
Yes, of course.
Which is more important, a child's life or someone being able to access an MP's speech?
This isn't going to save any lives.
Well, they would argue that it would.
What do you mean they would?
Peter Carr says it's not perfect. It's not perfect, but it is a start, is what I challenged him.
Most 13-year-olds are more tech-savvy than Peter Kyle. And the people that drew up this legislation didn't know what they were doing. We have to have a fresh look. I absolutely agree with you. I know that, you know, Nadine Dorries was the cabinet minister, very engaged with this and trying to find the right solutions. But I think if you asked her, she'd say it was designed to protect children, not to restrict what adults can say.
One female politician I did ask about this was Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander. She told me yesterday...
So a logical conclusion of what he is saying at the moment is that he is happy for, you know, this type of content to be online and for, you know, he wants to get rid of all of those offences that have been created in the Online Safety Act. Because he said that he wants to get rid of the Online Safety Act, and that is a consequence of getting rid of the Online Safety Act.
And the sort of content referenced, Jimmy Savile, as you heard me say, that's quite a quantum leap. How would you respond to Heidi Alexander, Transport Secretary?
They must be desperate. They literally must be desperate. I mean, why not? She could take me on the arguments. She could explain why having an elite police force unit checking what we say about asylum hotels is the right thing. She could tell me why it's right to censor online a speech given by a Member of Parliament under parliamentary privilege. No, they don't want a debate. They don't want to debate. They want to try and debase.
And which is the speech that's been censored in a way?
Her name is Katie Lamb. She's a newish Conservative Member of Parliament for Weald down in Kent. Yeah. And one of her speeches, if you now look at it online, has been censored.
And it's about what?
It's about immigration.
About immigration.
Funny that, isn't it?
We have a call coming in on this. George, you're in Cheshunt, and I think this touches you personally. Good morning, sir.
Yes, it does indeed. And good morning. Good morning to you, Ferrari. And
hello,
good morning to you, Nigel Farage.
Yes.
I'm going to try and keep my emotions tapped in for a second. And Mr. Farage, our son, Christopher, just 15 years old. He was murdered by predators to an attack propagated through social media 3 years ago. Had the Online Safety Act been in place, then platforms would have been forced to age verify, restrict harmful content, and add harsh matching to block grooming. Now, if repealed, you would leave countless more children vulnerable, as we were. Do you acknowledge that this law is not theoretical, but a matter of life and death for families like mine?
Well, let me express my condolences before I hand you my deep condolences to you and the rest of your family. Nigel Farage?
Yeah, no, awful. George, awful. If age verification of itself was able to prevent incidents and tragedies like this, I would, George, 100% support it. But the problem is it doesn't, because of the VPN route, which Nick and I mentioned a moment ago, and which LBC themselves have done an investigation into. So that is the problem. We have to find... There has to be a tech answer around this. I don't know what it is. Certainly the government doesn't know what it is, but there has to be a tech answer of some kind, and we need to try and find it. And George, my objection is that what you're describing here is exactly what the legislation that the Conservatives put in place was designed to do, but then they expanded it into a whole load of other areas. George, we do need to find a solution, but I'm sorry to say this is not it.
I'll allow you one quick comeback line because of the gravity of your story, George.
I would like to add, if it's okay with you guys, that, you often frame the act as an affront to free speech, but there is no free speech to laymen when a child is exploited and killed. Can you explain why basic protection constitutes state censorship?
I mean, a lot of people would say anything that would protect this this man's young son is almost worth the price, paying the price, Nigel Farage.
We're talking about two different things here. One, we're talking about how do we protect young people, how do we stop them accessing dangerous, violent content or worse. I'll tell you what, George, here's the real danger, that if you go through a VPN, you can then access content on what's called the dark web, which is even worse than what you can find online now.
George, condolences to you. Thank you for sharing the story. I wish your family well. Let's go to some email. Quick questions on the emails and the texts that are coming in. Rachel in Bexley, should the Bell Hotel in Epping be closed as the local authority wants?
Well, you can close it, but another one will open up somewhere else. We haven't got the official figures for yesterday. I believe it's 870 young men came across the English Channel yesterday. That will be confirmed at some point within the next hour or two. So that's a lot more Bell Hotels needed somewhere else. And that's the point, isn't it? You know, you can object locally, you can move the hotel on. Frankly, none of these people, none of these young men coming into Britain via this route should be put in hotels. None of them should be free to roam the streets. And they all should be deported.
Where should they be prior to deportation?
I think we're going to have to... Look, you know... And again, we have to be slightly careful with the legal situation, but there have been people arrested on charges of terrorism recently who crossed the English Channel. Why was the spark at the Bell Hotel? Well, because of an alleged sexual assault of a 14-year-old girl by somebody in that hotel. And the British public have had enough.
How concerned are you that they could be... And I've read that you support the mums and the dads and the grandparents that come out. Of anybody would, Mr.
Yes.
But there is a dangerous element out there, either an anarchic element, a right element, whatever. How nervous, how dangerous, how concerned are you that could...
Well, there might be a right element, but Essex Police literally escorted masked Antifa supporters from Epping Station to the Bell Hotel and then put them in police vans and drove them back to the railway station. They actually caused the confrontation. More broadly, I think the real worry is this, that if people lose confidence in the police and lose respect for the police, then we have a problem. And, you know, I don't want to see disorder, but you can't discount it.
Now, just to clarify, they didn't bust them, though, did they, as you said?
They bust them back, yes, in case they were tired, I suppose.
They did definitely, you categorically bust them back?
Oh, yes.
They did. You know that from...
Oh, yes.
You do. Okay. Harry in Harpenden. Prison officers are going to be given a trial period to use tasers. Is this something you would support, and the more widespread use of tasers?
Our prison officers, you couldn't pay me enough. Right now, you couldn't pay me enough to work as a prison officer. I know a couple of guys that work in Maidstone, in Kent. The deterioration of prisons, the threats and incidents of violence against prison officers is getting worse and worse and worse. And what's happening, Nick, is many of the older ones are retiring. They're going into private security or something else. They're being replaced by younger prison officers who were the best one in the world, don't probably quite know their way round in terms of how it works. So I don't think we have much choice but to give them tasers. But the danger, of course, is that the taser gets taken off the prison officer and used the other way. So there's no easy answer to this, but in principle, I do. And I also think, and you've run a campaign on this before, I honestly think that our police officers should carry tasers.
Routinely.
All of them.
Yeah. David's in Manchester. You're on the radio. David, your question.
Good morning, Nick. Good morning, Mr. Hello, Farage. Given your very close relationship to Donald Trump, and your frequent visits to the US over the past year, what's your view on Mr. Trump and his alleged links to the Epstein files, given the fact that you want to repeal an Online Safety Act?
I'm not quite sure I see the linkage, but look, I've no idea. I don't know any more than you do, David. I mean,
should all the Epstein files be released?
Well, that's up to them in America, isn't it?
What's your view?
Well, I mean, I think they should. It's with Pam Bondi, his Attorney General. I mean, the fact that Trump knew Epstein is not a shock. You know, Epstein was this huge New York figure for a very, very long time.
Did you meet Mr. Epstein?
No. No, I didn't. I didn't. Had I been 10 years older, I would have done. Because that, you know, they were the circles.
What has Mr. Trump said to you about Epstein?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. We've never discussed it. We've never discussed it. And let's be clear, David, he did not go to the island. Another former American president was a frequent visitor.
Why not just release all the files then, Mr. Farage?
Well, listen, our government doesn't release all sorts of files. I suspect they will. I suspect they will. And I think this is one area where...
But he could end it overnight, couldn't
he? Yeah, it's one area where Donald has sort of put himself into conflict with much of his own base. So I think probably he'll have to.
In what time period?
I've no idea.
Let's go to other calls. Thank you, David. Layla's in up in Edmonton. Layla, you're on the radio. Hello.
Hi. So I want to say that if you're raising the income tax threshold to 20 grand, that's going to cost 50 to 80 billion a year. And if you're raising the higher rate of income tax to 70k, that's going to cost 18 billion a year. And two child benefit cap, that's going to cost 3.4 billion.
Really?
Winter fuel, that's going to cost 1.5 billion. But looking at the savings, cutting asylum hotels, that will save 4 billion. DEI, that will save 7 billion. OBR says net zero will save 20 billion. And also it creates jobs. And it's not good for us.
I think, people are dying under a blizzard of figures. Yeah. Layla, can I move you to your question? I do want to hear your question, but...
My question is that the numbers don't add up, because if we're talking about introducing the two-child benefit, winter fuel, reinstating that universally, and
Layla, I'm really grateful. Just be aware. I know you've got the figures in front of you, but some people, you know, they can't hold on to those figures. But what we're saying, Layla, thank you, is, look, your sums don't add up. Spending commitments apparently total £141 billion a year.
Have you seen what's happened to our national finances since 2010? So it's quite comical to be told my sums don't add up. Do you know the Tories increased the national debt two and a half times. We now have a Labour government... where our borrowing requirement this year, every single month we get the figures, they're out. So, let us be clear. Just on one quick point.
Go on.
The two-child benefit. I was very clear that I thought British working people should be able to get that. And what I mean by that is, not people coming into the country from overseas, not those that are unemployed, but people who are working on low wages, where a couple both work, I think we should help them with tax credits.
Right? I agree with
you. So let's be clear with that.
And
on the overall sums, let's just talk. Isn't it funny? We have massive arguments about $1.5 billion on winter fuel payments. You know, can we, can't we afford it? But isn't it funny? We're perfectly happy to pump another potentially $70 billion into HS2.
Mm-hmm.
Even the OBR, who are, you know, effectively an instrument of government, really, even they admit that net zero is costing $30 billion a year. And, Nick, you can start going on and seeing massive cuts, massive savings that can be made.
But, Mr. Farage, your website still says spending commitments, £141 billion.
Yeah.
Financed by savings, this would be 100 times larger than the winter fuel payment you've referenced twice.
Did you...
100...
Did you see what the Bank of England have lost every year on quantitative easing?
Taking me elsewhere. Surely that lacks credibility,
No. You've asked, how are we going to pay for it? Okay, listen.
It's 100 times the savings of the winter fuel.
Listen.
Yes.
Listen.
Yes.
Scrap net zero. Scrap...
Right.
Hang on. Scrap HS2. Stop the Bank of England paying interest on QE money. How's that for a start?
Well, you scrap net zero, DEI, the coalition, George Osborne's austerity got £18 billion by the end of the Parliament, 2010-2015. You're going eight times that.
No. George Osborne massively... No. Nick, we're not having a proper debate here.
Well,
George Osborne, under George...
No.
Have a look at what you're looking at there. Even that. Have you seen what Osborne did to the national debt? It went up It's gone up 1.8 trillion. Not 140 billion. 1.8 trillion since Osborne became Chancellor.
You could put your hand on your heart and say these figures do add up.
Without a doubt.
Let's see what happens.
But it's all dependent. By the way, every single set of figures that any government puts in a budget or whatever is all dependent on one key component. And that is called growth, right? We have basically had no growth for many, many years, we con ourselves that gross domestic product, GDP, steadily goes up. It's flatland now. But actually, all that's happened is mass migration has pushed up the size of our national economy. If you look at GDP per capita, we are getting poorer. So you have to turn the economy around for any numbers to add up.
All right, let's get at least one more call in. Kel's in Harrow. Kel, you're on the radio. Morning, what's your question?
Hello, Nick, my strange, beloved friend, Nigel. Tesco, with regard to crime, what are your thoughts on scrapping Notting Hill Carnival?
The Notting Hill Carnival, cost of policing last year, £11.7 million. I don't need to remind you, Mr. Farage, that we've had fatal stabbings there. Mm. We have stabbings, unfortunately, on a regular basis and assaults on police officers. Mm. Nigel Farage?
Yeah, in the last couple of years, it's been pretty much a disgrace and appalling for the residents that live there. I wouldn't stop the Notting Hill Carnival. I'd put it in Hyde Park. We've got the wonderful facility of Hyde Park, where we can have festivals, where we can have concerts, where we can actually have knife arches, so that everyone going in could be checked that they haven't got a weapon, and they
so
can,
like a concert,
and they can have a celebration of Caribbean culture, and people will be a damn sight safer.
Would it be ticketed?
Well, it wouldn't have to be ticketed. I mean, I think what we're worried about here is how you police it. What we're worried about here, Nick, is whether people are carrying weapons. What we're worried about here are other members of the public getting caught up in this as they try and go about their lives. So I think it's very simple.
The organisers say the essence is, because of this, because I have put this to the organisers, the history dictates that it has to be in the area of Notting Hill, and senior police officers say, well, actually, it's become so big, it's virtually impossible, because it's designed not to police.
It's completely outgrown a concept of
these. So it's a success story?
In terms of the numbers that go, and a lot of people go and love it, and that's great. But too many people go and realise they can just run riot. And that's been happening. So, no, listen, we're very lucky in London to have something like Hyde Park. Let's use it.
Would you ever go?
If I was invited, I might.
Staying with crime, in the last minute we've got together, your colleague Sarah Poachin says that she sometimes feels that female officers on patrol are vulnerable. Do you share that view?
I guess that depends where they are and what they're doing. I mean, if you're a policewoman on their own, you know, and you're 5'2", maybe you would feel vulnerable. I don't know. I mean, look, I just think...
What is your line on female officers?
I have line on female officers.
Are you happy to them to
what
patrol
I've said,
together?
What I've said very clearly is that I do want criminals to be slightly fearful of the police.
Yeah.
And to do that, I think we do need height standards, we do need strength standards. Interestingly, I mean, Colin Sutton, you know, the famous detective who's joined our party this week...
On crow, leading on crime.
He said that female police officers were amongst his very best officers. But that's because they were investigating crimes, they were going out meeting people, talking in communities. What Sarah's talking about is something slightly different, is people on the beat. So, frankly, it doesn't matter whether they're men or women, but I want criminals to slightly fear them.
And has the bar been lowered, literally?
Absolutely. I mean, the police have dropped many of the height restrictions, many of the fitness restrictions that used to be in place. Standards are much lower. And maybe that's because people feel they don't really want to join the police.
I mean, if you go to Greater Manchester, Sir Stephen Watson, he insists that his police officers are shaven, that they're all tight.
You're talking my language.
And he's got a high clear-up rate, by the way.
Yeah, no, I do. You know, it's funny, isn't it, when you're part of a culture that takes pride in itself, that believes in itself, you can be more successful. And this is what Ben Stokes has done to the England cricket team. We've got the fifth test at the Oval today. And guess what? It's raining.
Well, it might need to rain without Stokes and without Joffre. Final question. We had a conversation about your views the party views and whether you should fear or whether you should respect a police officer.
Mm.
As a young man, Nigel Farage, can you recall your first experience with a police officer?
Yeah, I mean, seeing a local police officer in our village. I mean, you wouldn't see that anymore, but there was a local cop, you know, wearing his police uniform, and yeah, we were kids, 6, 7, whatever.
Were you a bit naughty? I'm not going to ask you what's the naughtiest thing you've
really
ever done.
I really wouldn't go there if
no,
I were you.
No, I would, no. were you fearful of the village bobby?
Respectful, and I think you knew if you did something wrong.
And did you ever have interaction with him at any time?
Only playful, I'm pleased to say. But you know, we've sort of gone down this road of saying, oh, well, we don't need police on the beat. It doesn't make any difference. And it's okay to nick 200 quids worth of stuff from a shop and not get prosecuted. And, you know, we've allowed lots of little areas that would have been prosecuted before to just go, and we raised the level of what's acceptable in society, and now we have 57% of women in London say they're afraid to walk the streets, and that's not at night.
Grateful for your time. Nigel
Thank
Farage
you.
Appearing on LBC. 8:33, headlines, Thomas Watts.
The Reform leader, Nigel Farage, has told LBC it is the wrong moment for the UK to recognise a Palestinian state. Canada has become the latest G7 country to say it'll take that step, a move Mr Farage says would reward Hamas. The Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, is to meet with the head of the air traffic control provider, NATS. Thousands of passengers face delays and cancellations because of another technical glitch yesterday. Heathrow is preparing to unveil its long-awaited plan for a third runway. It's expected to cost up to £60 billion, with a section of the M25 diverted through a tunnel underneath the site. LBC weather, heavy thundery showers across the south this morning, quite cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees.
LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 5% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that dream holiday or a weekend getaway. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.89% gross. Terms apply.
All those glasses are a great choice. And now you can pick a free pair from our Boots range.
Free?
That's right.
What, free?
Absolutely. There's hundreds to choose from too.
For free? Does the manager know?
I am the manager.
Oh, in that case, how do these look?
With buy one, get one free at Boots Opticians, everyone can save in style. Book an eye test today and see what's possible. Free Boots pair when you spend £150 on prescription glasses or sunglasses. Offer ends 23rd of September 2025. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:36, as we often do. Let's look back at what we've heard and what we've discussed. Nigel Farage, the leader of Reform UK. No shortage of calls, no shortage of questions. Perhaps the two, really, that certainly feature in the headlines at the moment are the so-called Manchester Airport brawl and the position in which the UK government finds itself with recognition, potentially recognition, of the state of Palestine. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, in the studio to pick up on those. Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, Nigel Farage saying that the Manchester Airport case would not have happened had he and Richard Tice not threatened to bring that private prosecution. Obviously, we have seen charges. We've seen those cases go to court now. But I think it's just going, well, what Nigel Farage is trying to do, and obviously what he's trying to do this summer, go to the heart of what he feels is that mistrust within the police, that mistrust, that crime going on across the country. But yes, I feel that what he was saying sort of about the idea this is where two-tier policing comes from, at least what people think two-tier policing comes from, is a message that I don't think the government really have managed to address very well. This incident, he said, happens at Manchester Airport, months go by, and he's talking about differences in the law, different convictions. I thought he was strong on that. Also on Palestine, of course, that's obviously in the news because of what Keir Starmer set out earlier this week about his plan to recognise, but he is saying that is a reward for terrorism now is not the right time to do so. So quite strong on that. And you're seeing, I think, quite a lot of backlash to Keir Starmer on Palestine, actually. You've seen, obviously, Emily Damari, one of the hostages on the front pages of the papers today, warning this is not the right time, that it risks basically threatening the whole peace process and, of course, not helping to get a ceasefire at all. I thought it was interesting on talking about police giving them tasers as well. I've not heard him say that before. Quite an interesting policy. Obviously, they're rolling them out in prisons.
Yes.
You know, not something that I would ever want to go and work in a prison was what
well, he said there's not enough money to pay him to be a prison guard, prison
exactly.
officer.
Yeah, exactly. Also thought he was very strong on the Online Safety Act. Interesting, obviously this has sparked quite a freedom of speech row, and I think, you know, obviously what he's facing a backlash from, is basically, do you want to protect children online or not?
He would argue it's been unfairly characterised that he does want that, but it's the law has gone too far, Natasha.
Yeah, but I just actually don't think that he's managed to make the case that is exactly what this law is meant to be doing, and actually he's trying to highlight the cases of where freedom of speech is up for debate. Where I did think he had a point is where he's talking about 16 and 17 year olds. The government wants to give them the vote, but then they're not going to be able to see so-called harmful content online. And of course, the tech firms obviously do seem to be taking quite a strict approach to this. And we are seeing what is being dubbed censorship on the internet. Social media firms basically trying to create this blanket approach rather than actually sort of do the proper age verification checks, as he noted our LBC investigation has been looking into. Thought he was strong on that as well. But one thing where I did think he really got unstuck, magic money tree Nigel Farage, where are you going to pay for it? You cannot just keep saying that you are going to scrap net zero, scrap HS2, and that we're going to be able to find the money for everything. He cannot announce new policy after new policy after new policy without actually saying how it's going to get paid for. You know, we are living in a world where politicians repeatedly are making fantasy promises, and I really don't feel like it's a helpful thing for him to keep buying into that narrative.
Well, just lastly, particularly when you point out that the pain they went through over the winter fuel payments, let me just get this right, they've got to go 100 times. They would have to go 100 times more than the winter fuel payment.
Exactly.
It's a lot of money to find.
It was just deflect on those questions. What about George Osborne? What about the public finances? If you want to be in government, you need to come up with your own credible plan for the economics and the finances, and I don't think that Nigel Farage has got it.
LBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting. Let's stay with policing matters, and the Britain's biggest police force, the Met, or Metropolitan in London, is to more than double its use of facial recognition cameras, up to 10 deployments a week. Explained in part, Commissioner of the Met, Sir Mark Rowley, telling LBC...
We're investing further in facial recognition so we can do more operations that drag wanted offenders off the street. Regardless of being in tough times, we're going to put officers and time where it matters most.
Let's turn to Fraser Sampson, who's a professor, former National Biometrics and Surveillance Camera Commissioner, serving as recently as 2023, also served as a police officer for nearly two decades, Professor of Governance and National Security at Sheffield Hallam University. What level of nervousness should there be about this, or none whatsoever? Good morning.
No, good morning. The nervousness, I think, is probably to be taken for granted, because this is still very new technology. It's not had the best passage since its first introduction at Notting Hill in 2016. Around the world, police forces have experimented with it, some of them very clumsily, and they're still facing some of the backlash from it. So that would be any nervousness from the police side. Nervousness from those on the other side of the camera, it probably shouldn't really be about the technology itself anymore. This isn't about the technology anymore. The tech is here. It has evolved, if you forgive the pun, beyond recognition. But have the police evolved with it? That's the acid test. And for me, it's for the police to prove that they have. And so the questions that I would encourage people to be asking of their police and their police chiefs is, what do we want them to do with this technology? Because it's available and it's here. What do we not want them to do? And what are we worried about what they might do with it, rather than should they, shouldn't they? Because I think that ship sailed a while ago.
Professor, you mentioned that other attempts at implementation have been clumsily managed. In what way were they clumsy? What went wrong?
Oh, you had police forces that were using algorithms designed to predict the aftershock of earthquakes and purporting to use them to predict criminality amongst individuals. I mean, it's a pity they didn't use it to predict the backlash they'd have got, because it didn't work. It was never going to work, and it set people back in terms of trust and confidence for some of this stuff. But I think one of the things that I still don't quite understand, and your listeners might not, is why are the police giving us 3 weeks' notice before deploying a new sophisticated tool to catch dangerous people on the loose in London? And the answer is because data protection and human rights policies require the police to give notice in order to let them opt out. Well, some of the people who want to opt out being seen by the cameras will be the very people that they're looking for. The best way for the police to demonstrate the potential of this tool is through results. And you're going to get more results if you're allowed to use it more widely.
Well, to that point, and as someone who served, you were in the job for nearly 20 years, how concerned should we be when people are saying there's not enough regulation?
There's always going to be a call for regulation. What you want to do is achieve the balance between people being able to have trust and confidence in the kit and the way it's going to be used, avoiding mission creep, which is a challenge for AI, because AI is by naturally, you know, is always in a permanent beta state, unfortunately. But you don't want those rules to hamper the way in which it can then be used and deployed and avoid things. But I think very quickly we all get to a tipping point with some of this technology where the police are having to explain why they didn't use it on a particular occasion where it might have avoided a certain type of harm. We're not there yet, but we've got to get the balance. So all of this technology needs to be used, whichever part of the UK it's used in, to a standard the public would expect and in a way that maintains their trust and confidence. That's what I persuaded the last government to put in the Home Office code of practice on public space surveillance. And as far as I'm aware, it's still there.
Lastly, you referenced Notting Hill. How relevant is it that we are currently going through a wave of demonstrations about affairs in the Middle East, other demonstrations about eco affairs? That presumably is prompting widespread use of these cameras, Professor.
Well, it might be. There are some things that it's not going to be very, very good at. And purpose in this setting is absolutely key. So what are they using it for? Prevention, as in retail, is something that the technology excels at. But if you're using it to arrest and detain, that's a different purpose and focus. Prosecution or deportation, are you using it to gather intelligence about other activities that you fear may arise over the course of the next few weeks? And being absolutely clear about what those purposes are and how the technology will assist you as the police in those, has got to be the starting point. And there shouldn't be any doubt about that before, let alone after you've used it.
Thanks for your time. Fraser Sampson is Professor of Governance and National Security at Sheffield Hallam University, served as the National Biometrics and Surveillance Camera Commissioner as recently as 2023, and was a police officer for 19 years. Thanks for your input. We'll come back to our conversation concerning online safety then later in the hour. The true dream maker, or she ran the Fame Academy, Sylvia Young, has died. Sadly, she gave us stars such as Amy Winehouse, Dua Lipa, Leona Lewis, Matt Smith, and even... one of the Spice Girls. Just turned 8:46, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
The Reform leader Nigel Farage has told Nick it is the wrong moment for the UK to recognise a Palestinian state. The Transport Secretary is to meet with the head of the air traffic control provider, NATS, after another major technical problem yesterday. And Heathrow is preparing to unveil its long-awaited plan for a third runway. LBC weather, heavy thundery showers in the south, cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. There are severe delays on the M25 due to an accident clockwise after Junction 2 for the Darrenth interchange. Also on the M25, there are long delays anti-clockwise at Junction 14 for Heathrow, with delays to Maple Cross. That's also because of an accident. In Beckton, the A117 Woolwich Manor Way is blocked both ways due to an accident between the Beckton flyover and the retail park. The A400 Junction Road in Tufnell Park is blocked. That's in both directions because of a fallen tree at Fortes Road. There are delays on the M4 Heathrow Spur Road southbound before the tunnels into the terminals, and there are flight cancellations from Heathrow and Gatwick airports following a technical fault, and buses are running instead of trains on Southern between Horsham and Dorking.
The all-new LBC app. News your way. Download it for free from the App Store. This is LBC.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus, Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. TNCs apply.
Call Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. LBC.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Have I won a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wickes kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wickes, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms and minimum spend apply.
When you're transported somewhere you've never been, when you discover hidden gems and amazing sights, when you just can't wait to pack your bags...
It's just stunning.
We should definitely go there.
I'm already looking at flights.
Nice.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels so you can enjoy a world of travel from the comfort of your sofa. Search TV licence together.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. Text CLAIM to 86688. My Claim Group. Authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. You don't need to use a CMC. You can claim direct to your lender and the Financial Ombudsman for free. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before nine, should tell you that after nine, I'm going to come back to my conversation with Nigel Farage, his views on online safety with the considerable concerns, of course, for young people, those most vulnerable, which some of you are saying he utterly dismissed. Some of you are saying, of course, free speech is important. So that's coming up at nine. But now, a story we mentioned in our look at the world of business in the first hour, this idea of new development at Heathrow, an alternative. And it would seem, on face value, quite an appealing alternative. We wouldn't have to dig up the M25, the runway would apparently be shorter, and it wouldn't cost as much. What's not to like? It's being put together by hotel magnate Surinder Arora, as is a significant landowner in the Heathrow area and chairman of the Arora Group, and he joins me now. Good to have you on, Mr. Arora. I briefly touched on some of the highlights. How would you sell the plan to the government and to my listeners? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, we've been working on this plan for over 8 years now, and we've always said that we must make sure that whatever we do is deliverable, affordable, and something where we can actually change the experience that we all talk about, that experience at Heathrow Airport from a service standards point of view. So we're talking about bringing in hospitality experience. We're talking about something deliverable and something that's for real, because whenever Heathrow came up, Nick, all those years ago after the Davies Commission report and saying let's build a 3,500-metre runway, let's dig up the M25 and sink the M25, well, that's something environmentally would be a disaster. And if you just see the works that have been going over on the M25 near the A3 the last couple of years, very minor compared to what we're talking about here. And here you're talking about not just the M25 but also the M4. So we've been working very closely with the airlines, with the regulator, with everyone, to say what is the optimum size, and then we'll deliver what our customer wants.
You reference we, who, as well as obviously the Arora Group. What is the team that you've pulled in, Mr. Arora?
So we've actually been working with the world's leading advisors. So we've got, for example, we've got Bechtel. Bechtel have built airports infrastructure around the world. They worked on nearly 200 airports, so they know what they're talking about. We got Scott Brownrigg, our local architects from London, Chiswick, you know, and Scott Brownrigg, the architects, they've actually done work at Heathrow, at Gatwick, and also the new terminal, the new airport in Istanbul, the biggest terminal. So we have brought in a great team And this is something for real that we're going to make a difference.
Heathrow's plans are expected to be made public tomorrow. The Daily Telegraph is reporting that sources close to Heathrow say that your plan, the Aurora plan, would mean the runway would have to sit above the main access road from the M4, which cannot be lowered because of its proximity to railways. How accurate is that, Mr. Aurora? I see you chuckling. I sense you don't think it is that accurate.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, I think I see this as a great honour that His Majesty's government have said, well, actually, for the first time in our history, we will seek alternative plans, which is great news. So we'll put our best bid forward. We will put the our plans forward to the government. And it is nowhere near the work they're talking about over the M25. And if you just imagine, Nick, if you've driven into Heathrow, Terminals 1, 2 and 3 on the M4 spur, which is already lowered, it's already sunk. So we don't have to do anything there as such. And we won't even have to shut it down. The work can actually happen at night time. So the disruption will be a lot less. And again, we'll let the experts, the engineers and the designers come up with that design.
And it's an expansion of Heathrow. More flights, ultimately, is your plan. Is that right?
Well, I think, you know, both. I mean, we've been talking as a nation for nearly three decades that we need to expand. And if we don't expand, then quite frankly, we're left behind in the queue with the rest of the world. If you look at places like India, as an example, in the last 10 years, they built 70 airports. Now, you know, we as a great nation need to make sure that we stay ahead of the game. We must do what's right for economy. And I welcome the current government's views and plans to expand and grow and not actually be using public funding, the taxpayers' funding. So that's exciting.
Lastly, I know it doesn't fall to you, it falls to the government and the relevant departments, but do we have a timeline of how long each plan is considered and when there might be a definitive response?
Again, I haven't seen Heathrow's plans. We actually submitted our plan. Well, we've actually given some information to yourselves and the others overnight, and all our plans are going to be obviously submitted to the DfT, the government regulator, CAA, later on today. And I know not only is our plan more deliverable, economically it's better, it's also affordable, and it's quicker.
Right. Grateful for your time as ever. Thank you. Surinder Arora, businessman, founder and chairman of the Arora Group, significant landowner in that area, putting forward a plan which we wouldn't have to dig up the M25, the runway would be shorter and it would cost less. As I said at the top, what's not to like? 5 to 9 is the time. Let's look back at what we heard from Nigel Farage, Daniel in Golders Green. He talked a bit about crime towards the end, admittedly, and he's been sort of blitzing the crime agenda over the last few weeks. What do you take from what you heard? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Brilliant interview. Nick, I've got to say, as you know, I was a former frontline Metropolitan Police officer.
Yes, sir.
And as you know, and your listeners will know, over the last year, we've seen a massive rise in shop theft, organised crime, knife crime, moped-enabled mobile phone snatches, particularly in London. So it was very reassuring to hear Nigel Farage talk tough on crime, and I think that's what we need, because we've also seen at the same time over 2,000 dangerous prisoners released from prison.
He also said that we're probably letting people into the job we shouldn't. They're maybe not tall enough, fit enough. How did you respond to that, having done the job?
Well, Nick, having done the job, as you say, I think there has been a lowering of recruitment standards. And I think certainly some of the officers that I've seen, certainly it would be questionable as to whether they can tackle violent and dangerous criminals. So I think we do need to look at the fitness levels. And in fact, it is a fact that the bleep test, certainly in the Met, has been reduced, has been lowered.
This is where you have to run between two different points and what's called the bleep test. Lastly, WPCs, as probably you knew them, two female officers patrolling, two females. How comfortable or not are you with that, Daniel?
Well, as long as they're competent, fit, they passed all the tests and they are good police officers, I've got absolutely no problem. But I think there is a question to be asked, you know, if you've got two small female officers and you've got a very large, violent, dangerous male or maybe a group of people, how can they deal with it?
Grateful for talking to you, Daniel. Thanks. Good to have you on again 3 minutes before nine. Now, we started the show with the news that Canada overnight is joining a growing list of nations talking of recognising the Palestinian state with some conditions. And I thought it'd be an idea to get the view from somebody who felt this all too keenly. I spoke with Steve Brisley. Now, his sister Leanne and her two daughters were killed by Hamas in that raid on October the 7th, and his brother-in-law taken hostage. He said this.
this statement is a misstep and a hurriedly written statement that has not meant to come across as it has. But how it has come across to us is that it is setting conditions for Israel, conditions that are predicated on Hamas having to agree to things that they will not agree to. And it does appear to us that that no such conditions have been put onto Hamas. But it incentivizes them.
And many of you wanted to have your say. I said we would return. Let's get at least one more person in. Julia in Edgware, your reaction to what's happened overnight. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you for taking my call. I think if you search for Khalid Mash'al, who was number two after Haniyeh, when Haniyeh was assassinated, then he is the leader of Hamas.
Right.
He clearly said, we are not part of the two-state solution. Okay.
Well, they can't be. I don't think anyone ever thought they could be, Julia.
So where is Starmer going to throw?
Because as Canada has said as well, they want full, free, fair elections. And as the Arab states are saying, the Qatar, that Hamas has to be dismantled. They've said that overnight.
Okay, so why Qatar is actually hosting the leaders of Hamas?
Well, anything,
they're two-faced.
Anything
they're
to
two-faced.
Get, no, anything to get peace, Julia. The British government sat down with the IRA. You have to eventually, sadly,
yes,
sit across the table from people you possibly despise. You have to.
When IRA were ready to
disband. Discuss.
No, sorry.
I'm sorry, Julia, but we can't. I don't want to be rude, but we're already late to the news. I can't play diss words. It's just Julia, have yourself a safe day. We need to move on. We move on by looking back at the conversation we had with the leader of Reform UK and the ongoing row about online safety.
There has to be a tech answer around this. I don't know what it is. Certainly the government doesn't know what it is, but there has to be a tech answer of some kind, and we need to try and find it.
Dispute? No, I never will know. And we say farewell to the true star maker.
He walks away, the sun goes down, he takes the day, but I'm grown.
Amy Winehouse, just one of the stars who went through the doors of the Sylvia Young Academy. She's died at 86. We'll have a full appreciation of an extraordinary career and actually a really, really decent woman who I had the privilege of meeting. Stories, news is next on LBC, 9 o'clock.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the Reform leader Nigel Farage has told Nick that the US is the only country that can broker peace in the Middle East. He's criticised Keir Starmer's move towards recognising a Palestinian state by September. Canada has become the latest G7 country to take that step. Mr. Farage says it won't do anything to stop the suffering in Gaza.
You can't recognise a Palestinian state at this moment in time whilst Hamas, a terrorist organisation dedicated in their own charter to wiping Israel off the face of the map, exists. So, no, it would be wrong. And I do wonder sometimes whether we've all forgotten what happened on October the 7th.
The Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, is to hold an urgent meeting to discuss the latest air traffic control failure. Hundreds of flights were delayed after the NATS system went down for about 20 minutes yesterday. NATS has apologised, but some airline bosses are calling for its chief executive to go. Business Minister Gareth Thomas has told Nick that an investigation is underway.
That we need to understand what has happened. 2 years ago, there was a bigger problem, and a number of measures were taken. Clearly, they weren't enough. We need to understand what exactly went wrong yesterday.
Heathrow Airport is set to unveil its long-awaited blueprint for a third runway. It's expected to include plans to divert the M25 through a tunnel with a total cost of tens of billions of pounds. Ministers will also look at some rival proposals. They include a plan for a shorter runway from the hotel tycoon Surinder Arora.
We're talking about something deliverable and something that's for real, because whenever Heathrow came up, Nick, all those years ago after the Davies Commission report and saying, let's build a 3,500-metre runway, let's dig up the M25 and sink the M25, well, that's something environmentally would be a disaster.
Heathrow has declined to comment on the proposal from the Aurora Group. And the latest audience figures show LBC remains the UK's leading commercial radio news talk brand. 3.4 million people are now tuning in every week, and 1.4 million are choosing Nick Ferrari at breakfast to start their day. So thank you for listening. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 46 at 91.83. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 16. LBC weather, heavy thundery showers across the south, quite cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
There's always a lot going on. I'm on site getting the job done, running the business too, payments, invoices, admin, all on me. But now with Tap to Pay, I can take payments there and then, and Sage sorts the admin afterwards. Everything's sorted in the background so I don't spend hours doing it later. Magic.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping British businesses like Mike at Residual Electrical Contractors. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after nine on Thursday, July the 31st. Nigel Farage making headlines on LBC with his views on online safety. There's been a to and fro, of course, between him and the government. We'll bring you up to speed on that and ask, he wants it scrapped, but what about the safety of our children? Plus, what lies behind the alarming decline in students learning languages? And you'll never guess what they've swapped languages for. And farewell to the woman who really did run a FAME Academy. Stars such as Denise Van Outen, Amy Winehouse and Tom Fletcher, frontman of McFly. That's later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
An ugly exchange of words over a very grievous safety issue, which is just how safe our young people and others who are vulnerable, by the way, are online. Now, if we bring you back to the political row, it's now reported that Number 10 orchestrated the what's called Jimmy Savile attack on Nigel Farage. Several government sources saying Science Secretary Peter Kyle had cleared the comment, likening his stance on this to Jimmy Savile. I repeat, his stance, not the man himself, Jimmy Savile, when he made the claim earlier. He said the reform leader was on the side of child predators and extreme pornographers. Now, understandably, because of how seriously LBC takes online safety, and you remember the special day we set aside earlier in the year, something to which we shall be returning, by the way, later in this year, it is, well, we know how important it is because I shared the figures with you. And it's horrific. In the last 3 years, 43 young people, aged 11 to 19, have taken their lives as a result of material or influences or whatever it might be that they picked up online. So for Nigel Farage to rather blithely say it needs to be scrapped, what of the safety? Something we explored in considerable depth in the phone-in in the previous hour.
Well, no, but calling me an enabler for people like Jimmy Savile, absolutely appalling. I also thought, Nick, it was incredibly badly judged in this sense. That when Boris Johnson, 3 years ago, you know, accused Starmer and said, look, you know, you were the guy that could have prosecuted Jimmy Savile, you failed to do so. The levels of moral indignation that we got from Labour on this. How dare Johnson do this? And yet they use the Savile analogy with
the papers are reporting that this was authorised by Number 10.
I know.
That line.
Yes, I know. Which just
do you believe that?
I think they're losing the plot in every way, yes. I really do. And I think we're at a place where I think the PM in particular and others, they've become completely obsessed with me.
But why and would so, you not want online safety, Mr. Farage?
Oh, I do want online safety.
Because you're aware, in the last 3 years, 24% of 10 to 19-year-olds have taken their lives. 29% of those who have taken their lives. 43 young people have ended their lives because of influences they've had or images they've seen online. Why do you not want safety online?
I couldn't agree more. And you're right. It is those suicide sites that this legislation was intended to stop. Absolutely. But here's the problem. number one, this legislation doesn't stop that because there are things called VPNs. Yeah. And it'll take you about, just pop your phone on, within 45 seconds.
The LBC did an investigation.
So that's the first problem. It doesn't actually deal with it despite the best intentions. And if this legislation is designed to protect children, why under it are we setting up an elite police force to monitor what people say about illegal immigration and migrant hotels? Why already online are we seeing a speech from a member of parliament being censored? And by the way, why is it 16 and 17 year olds now cannot connect with some news content directly, but they're going to get the vote?
So how would you seek to protect those vulnerable?
This legislation is the biggest threat to free, open debate and speech we've ever seen from a government.
You want safety online, don't you, Mr. Farage?
Yes, of course.
Which is more important, a child's life or someone being able to access an MP's speech?
This isn't going to save any lives.
Well, they would argue that it would.
What do you mean they would?
Peter Carl says it's not perfect. It's not perfect, but it is a start, is what I challenged him.
Most 13-year-olds are more tech-savvy than Peter Kyle. And the people that drew up this legislation didn't know what they were doing. We have to have a fresh look. I absolutely agree with you. I know that, you know, Nadine Dorries was the cabinet minister, very engaged with this and trying to find the right solutions. But I think if you asked her, she'd say it was designed to protect children, not to restrict what adults can say.
One female politician I did ask about this was Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander. She told me yesterday...
So a logical conclusion of what he is saying at the moment is that he is happy for, you know, this type of content to be online and for, you know, he wants to get rid of all of those offences that have been created in the Online Safety Act. Because he said that he wants to get rid of the Online Safety Act, and that is a consequence of getting rid of the Online Safety Act.
And the sort of content referenced, Jimmy Savile, as you heard me say, that's quite a quantum leap. How would you respond to Heidi Alexander, Transport Secretary?
They must be desperate. They literally must be desperate. I mean, why not? She could take me on the arguments. She could explain why having an elite police force unit checking what we say about asylum hotels is the right thing. She could tell me why it's right to censor online a speech given by a member of parliament under parliamentary privilege. No, they don't want a debate. They don't want a debate. They want to try and debase.
And which is the speech that's been censored in a way?
Her name is Katie Lamb. She's a newish Conservative Member of Parliament for Weald down in Kent. And one of her speeches, if you now look at it online, has been censored.
And it's about what?
It's about immigration.
About immigration.
Funny that, isn't it?
We have a call coming in on this. George, you're in Cheshunt, and I think this touches you personally. Good morning, sir.
Yes, it does indeed. And good morning. Good morning to you, Ferrari. And
Hello,
good morning to you, Mr. Roger Farage.
Yes.
I'm going to try and keep my emotions tapped in for a second. And Mr. Farage, our son, Christopher, just 15 years old, he was murdered by predators to an attack propagated through social media 3 years ago. Had the Online Safety Act been in place, then platforms would have been forced to age verify, restrict harmful content, and add harsh matching to block grooming. Now, if repealed, you would leave countless more children vulnerable, as we were. Do you acknowledge that this law is not theoretical, but a matter of life and death for families like mine?
Well, let me express my condolences before I hand you my deep condolences to you and the rest of your family. Nigel Farage?
Yeah, no, awful. George, awful. If age verification of itself was able to prevent incidents and tragedies like this, I would, George, 100% support it. But the problem is it doesn't, because of the VPN route, which Nick and I mentioned a moment ago, and which LBC themselves have done an investigation into. So that is the problem. We have to find, there has to be a tech answer around this. I don't know what it is. Certainly the government doesn't know what it is, but there has to be a tech answer of some kind, and we need to try and find it. And George, my objection is that what you're describing here is exactly what the legislation that the Conservatives put in place was designed to do, but then they expanded it into a whole load of other areas. George, we do need to find a solution, but I'm sorry to say this is not it.
I'll allow you one quick comment line because of the gravity of your story, George. One response.
I would like to add, if it's okay with you guys, that, you often frame the act as an affront to free speech,
mm-hmm.
but there is no free speech to laymen when a child is exploited and killed. Can you explain why basic protection constitutes state censorship?
I mean, a lot of people would say anything that would protect this young son is almost worth the price, worth paying the price, Nigel Farage.
We're talking about two different things here. One, we're talking about how do we protect young people, how do we stop them accessing dangerous, violent content or worse. I'll tell you what, George, here's the real danger, that if you go through a VPN, you can then access content on what's called the dark web, which is even worse than what you can find online now.
Nigel Farage speaking with me earlier. Neil's in South Hams. Now, you work in this field, don't you, in a sense? Good morning, Neil.
Yeah, good morning. I have skin in the game. I'm a website designer.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say from the word go, I don't agree with the vast majority of what Nigel Farage stands for. However, on this point, he might have a case. He's very misguided. You can't use a VPN to access the darknet. You use something called Tor. Tor is a browser which was developed by the US Navy. Okay, so let's just start talking about facts. Forbes magazine did a survey of the UK population. 79% know how to use a VPN. 51 million people. So don't use this, it's about protecting the children. It's nonsense. This is about privacy and control and information and data. I'm very sorry about the previous caller whose died.
Whose son died.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But 43 children, as tragic as that is, in 3 years, mildly over, 12, 15 a year? Look at the statistics of how people die on an annual basis. 15 a year, but as tragic as that is not a significant statistic.
It's more than one a month with something where the government says, there could be regulations put in place that would stop these people being subjected
to
that.
And I could fly to the moon, Nick. It doesn't mean to say it's going to happen. So this...
But why your opposition to something that is tidying up... I don't understand your opposition.
Because it's flawed in so many ways.
He himself accepts it is a start. What's that expression? Don't let the enemy be the perfect of the good, or whatever that expression was.
Yeah, it's not a start. Peter Kyle said on the 25th of February on Radio 4 that he would, and I quote, put obstacles in your way if you are viewing things on the internet he doesn't agree with. Now, I'm really sorry, but...
That's clumsy language. But stopping, I hate to say it, suicide sites has to be the right thing.
Yes, absolutely. There are things on the internet, Nick, and you have to accept this. Bad people will do bad things. You have to accept that. So,
not just on the internet.
Yes, absolutely. So what do we do? Do we ban cars because they kill over 1,000 people a month?
No, but we ensure that children wear safety belts, and if they have a child seat in the back, it's properly strapped into anchor points.
More children will die on the roads this year.
But that doesn't mean looking
at stuff on the internet.
Well, it doesn't mean we don't try and address them. Neil, I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation as a professional in the field. Thanks for your input. Let's see what others make of what you say. Coming up later in this hour. To Sylvia Young, the creator of so many stars, one of whom, Amy Winehouse. 9:16 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Nigel Farage has told Nick it is the wrong moment for the UK, France and Canada to recognise a Palestinian state. The Transport Secretary is to meet with the head of the air traffic control provider, NATS, after another technical failure yesterday. And Heathrow is preparing to unveil its long-awaited plan for a third runway. LBC weather, heavy thundery showers across the south, quite cloudy elsewhere. A high of 25 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. There are long delays on the M25 because of an accident anti-clockwise from Junction 17 for Maple Cross to Junction 15 for the M4. Also on the M25, things are slow clockwise from Junction 29 for Romford to the QE2 bridge. That's again due to an accident. The A400 Junction Road in Tufnell Park is blocked in both directions because of a fallen tree at Fortess Road. In Hornsey, the A103 Church Lane is blocked northbound due to a broken down vehicle. That's from Tottenham Lane to Ribbers Dell Road. Flooding in Euston is causing queues on the A501 Euston Road westbound at Gordon Street, and there are flight cancellations from Heathrow and Gatwick airports following a technical fault last night.
LBC.
At your local Boots pharmacy, you can manage your prescriptions in the most convenient way for you, so you can get text updates when your prescription is in and ready for you to collect, or you can have them delivered straight to your door. And with Boots, you can always pop in store for expert advice from a friendly Boots pharmacist.
Hello, how can we help?
It's easy to switch your prescriptions to Boots today. Boots, with you for life. Participating surgeries, prescription and delivery charges may apply, subject to availability.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like. From real Octopus Energy calls.
You just get it right, the customer service, the sort of communication. You've stepped it up, I think, for an energy company. So well done.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
For simple, fuss-free pet insurance policies for cats and dogs, visit petsinapickle.co.uk. For actual pickles, try the supermarket.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no. Me, I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers, here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in, kettle's on. Oh,
thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
Feel the thunder of hooves, the tension as they race past, your heart in your chest, that split second of silence before the roar of the finish. That glorious Goodwood feeling. Qatar Goodwood Festival, presented by Visit Qatar, July 29th to August 2nd. Book now.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
All right, we'll come back to our conversation concerning online safety. Matthew, you will be the next caller on that. But it is fair time to say farewell to someone, a true star maker. She really ran the British version of the Feynman Academy. So what unites these three stars?
He walks away, the sun goes down, he takes the day.
Actually dancing along for the last of those three. You had Amy Winehouse, Dua Lipa, and McFly frontman Tom Fletcher, who all attended the Sylvia Young Stage Academy. I could have told you about Nicole Appleton, Dean Gaffney, Denise Van Outen, Matt Smith. It goes on and on and on. She's died aged 86. I had the privilege of meeting her a couple of times. Such a fantastically warm and welcoming woman. But enough from me. Let's speak to another star who has created Angie Greaves, who's one of my global radio colleagues. She's at Smooth Radio, and she attended a class at Sylvia Young Theatre School and knew her personally. Angie, sad day for you. Thank you for coming on the show. How long ago were you at the school, and what did you learn? Good morning.
Okay, so morning, Nick. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
I actually attended Sylvia Young's adult tap dancing class on a Friday evening. Absolutely loved it. So as a child, I was in performing arts, and I did the ballet and the tap and the modern. And when my daughters attended Sylvia Young's Saturday school, and my younger daughter, she was part of the Lion King school, because a lot of the cast of the Lion King came out of Sylvia Young's school.
Right.
I can remember sitting in the cafe bar one Saturday morning, and I went and I was peeping through the window of a tap dancing class, and she came up behind me. She went, "Oi, oi, what's this?" And I said, "Yep." I said, "Oh my goodness, I miss these days, Miss Young." She said, "Well, there is an adult tap dance class Friday evening. I tell you what, Nick, my tap shoes, I dusted them off, and I was in that class." No, it was great, because what I admired about her was she didn't just home in on young talent. If you had a skill or a passion as an adult, there were classes there for you. And that's what I really loved about her. And I would do these classes, we'd go and have a chat, then I'd go off to work. She was just a really, really warm person. And the fact that the school started from a club, which was really like a youth club for kids, you'd get your biscuit, you'd get a drink, and then it just grew and grew and grew. When I first met her, I think the club was in Marylebone, and then it changed. The school changed to somewhere, I think it was off of Edgware Road, but an amazing school, a woman that saw talent, honed in on talent. I mean, you mentioned there Denise and Emma Bunton. Yeah. You know, the Fletchers, Giovanna and Tom. But the fact that she also just looked at me and said, "Come on, girl, get your tap shoes on." And it was just great. It was better than being in the gym for me.
Angie, you often read or you see that sometimes there's a rather ugly competitive edge to the youngsters who go to schools or academies such as these. But I sense that was never the case with Sylvia.
If it was there, she would stamp it out. Because she wasn't of what I'm going to say the social media age, our age. You're there to learn a craft, home in on your craft, home in on your passion. It's a competitive business anyway. But why waste time being jealous of others? You do you. You do what's best for you. And I think that's something that she really instilled in that school. Just get down to the brass tacks. Get down to that craft. And you know, that was the school to do it.
Lastly, Angie, we've missed a chance to make this woman a dame. I accept she had an OBE, so she was honoured, quite rightly. But we're talking damehood for someone like this, shouldn't we have been?
Absolutely. Without a shadow of a doubt. When you think that a lot of the music that we listen to now, those artists came out of Sylvia Young School. Look at the television. There's a large percentage of actors and actresses that came out of Sylvia Young School. Hello, Eliza Doolittle, her granddaughter, Frances Russell, her daughter. Just look at the theatre, not just The Lion King, but let's look at Les Mis. Let's look at so many actors and actresses treading the boards. They started at Sylvia Young's. That should have been recognised.
Great speaking with you, Angie. Sorry, commiserations, obviously, for you. Tough day today, but you've done such an appreciation of an extraordinary career. Sylvia Young then dying, and she had, of course, condolences to all her family. Sylvia Young dying aged 86 with such a list of stars behind her. Let's come back to the conversation we were having, well, in the previous hour, and indeed, actually, we've been discussing it in the toing and froing, I should say. Between various politicians. Matthew's in Birmingham. Online safety, the law as it's currently being put through, is it fit for purpose? Good morning.
I agree that there are serious problems with it. I believe that the VPNs make an absolute mockery of the law. I believe that if your government is serious about age verification, then there should be a centralized database that won't be hacked because it's in the hands of private companies. I think that there are serious problems with it, especially given that Wikipedia is now in a legal battle where it's at risk of shutting down because of the restrictions that are being placed on it. The problem is that Nigel Farage, his skill is that he will correctly identify real problems that people face. Mm-hmm. He does that for example, with the NHS. He'll say the NHS has problems, but what's his solution? Well, I think we're going to have to move to an insurance-based system of healthcare. Mm-hmm. He points to problems with the EU, and his solution to that was no-deal Brexit, which even his own party says would be even worse for the cost of living crisis than what we have now. He points to poverty across the UK. Again, he made worse via Brexit. He points to crime rising in the UK, again, made worse by the cost of living crisis, which was made worse by his Brexit. Every time he points to a real problem. So I agree with him that this is a flawed bill. But the problem is his solutions will be far worse because he says he's doing this in the name of free speech. But the Reform Party is not a party that cares about free speech. They're a party that has called for the banning of flags, whether that's being a Richard Tice, the deputy leader, saying that there should be a ban on EU flags at last night of the proms, whether it's with Bob Villen when he said that if you vote Reform, then you can get your country back from these lunatics. That's censorship. This is the party that hires lawyers to attack anybody.
Okay. So do you think there's a degree of naivety then? Is that what you're saying as regards Mr. Farage?
It's not naivety. I believe it's dishonesty. I believe it's malevolence. I believe.
Where is the dishonesty as regards what he's? By the way, I don't agree with him, but what he's saying about the online safety bill, I think it's not dishonesty. He genuinely believes it's an assault on freedom, freedom of speech.
So this is what happens with people like Nigel Farage. They will, like Andrew Tate, he'll point to crises in men's mental health, but his solution is to tell men that women, the main people they're attracted to, are horrendous people. So he ends up leaving them more lonely than before. Same with Nigel Farage. He is correct when he says that the VPN, the fact that that's now the top searched app on the App Store, prove that this app isn't going to achieve the goal that it set out to do.
Matthew, thank you. Alex in Southampton. Alex, your take on online safety. Good morning.
Yeah, hi there. Morning, Nick. I think the online safety bill is a load of rubbish. I think it's it comes back to a basic fact of what you said. It needs to be device-based.
Right.
The only way to do device-based is the IMEI number, which is the actual address of your device itself.
Yeah.
So
why
not all the phone companies? And it only sorts out the mobile side of it. Home broadband, that's down to the parents. You can block your own stuff from that side.
Yeah.
But if all the mobile companies have a central database, when you get a phone for a 13-plus-year-old, you log their IMEI number, and all of a sudden you've got all of that 18-plus content out of their site.
Do you think some of this, obviously the tech companies put it up and the youngsters go after it, but a lot, if there was greater parental responsibility, Alex...
I didn't want to bring parents into it straight away, but like I say, I mean, that sorts out the... that is parental responsibility to register an IMEI number of a device at the age of 13 or when you get them their first phone. I think then the parental responsibility at home comes in where you've got the parental controls from those tech companies to do it yourself. I mean, they've always been there, but nobody ever uses them because you get your broadband installed and you don't go into the settings. You know, it's just something that's done. And coming from an online, I mean, I've done quite a lot of stuff online and seeing people's profiles unlocked, showing pictures of children, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's all there, but it is down to the parents. It is down to the tech companies. It is down to everybody as a collective to do it. But all this stuff makes money and sales.
Alex, thank you for that. Coming up after the news...
Después de las últimas noticias, una discusión con Nick Ferrari sobre la importancia de aprender idiomas.
Did you not understand that? Well, proves my point, doesn't it? 9:30, you listen to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari. I will translate. With me, Nick Ferrari. News time, Thomas Watts.
Nigel Farage has told Nick that the US is the only country that can broker peace in the Middle East. The Reform leader has criticised the Prime Minister's move towards recognising a Palestinian state by September. There are fresh calls for Britain's air traffic control chief to resign over another technical glitch. Hundreds of flights were delayed after the NATS system went down for about 20 minutes yesterday afternoon. The Metropolitan Police is to more than double its use of live facial recognition. The controversial system used to identify wanted offenders will be deployed up to 10 times a week in London. LBC weather. Heavy thundery showers across the south. Quite cloudy elsewhere. A high of 25 degrees.
This is LBC.
Psst, have you heard?
About what?
About Boots Optician's ultimate eye test with OptiMap scan.
Why are you whispering?
I think it's for VIPs. It's an in-depth look into your eye that can detect health conditions that other eye scans might miss.
Why are you still whispering?
I can't seem to stop.
Book an eye test and ask about OptiMap in-store at Boots Opticians, rated the UK's favourite opticians.
Selected stores, charges apply, Google review data, May 2024 to May 2025 of national chain opticians only. Contact marketing at boots-opticians.co.uk for details.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero-emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Who's a good human? Jenny is, because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're going to do. Even if it is 3 a.m. and it's raining cat lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. Freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door. At a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny.
Oh.
Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Online safety. Daniel's in Watford. What has this government legislation, what might this government legislation achieve in your view? Good morning.
I think it's a good thing overall, but I think the age is too low and it should be raised to 18. You had the gentleman caller who was right on one front but wrong on another. He talked about blocking an IMEI.
Yeah.
Telecommunications companies, they can actually block it at point of sale for the SIM. It's called an adult content bar. And it's added at point of sale and can be added and removed at any time by the customer, by the adult.
Okay. Do you have children?
I do. I have two.
Might I ask their ages?
They're 13 and 10.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Right in the sweet spot.
Age.
Yeah, of
it
this.
It is, absolutely.
So, how concerned are you? What are you doing? Is your knowledge in part informed by the fact that you're a dad and you're nervous about this?
It's informed by both. Actually, I'm a dad, and I work in telecoms. I work in the industry, and since this has happened, a lot of people coming in asking for the content block to be removed so they can access the adult websites, etc. But I'm also conscious that sites like YouTube. I know that one of your presenters said that YouTube's a good thing, but I caught my daughter watching a crime documentary, which is quite graphic. So you can block certain things on YouTube, but crime documentaries are in their nature, you know, murders, etc. And I think parents have to be very aware of what their kids are doing online.
How do you monitor your children's use?
There's a few ways. There's web search histories to make sure you keep track of what they're doing. Just go for their web browser once a week, but don't make it obvious what you're doing. You can also make apps kids safe so they can't access certain apps like Instagram and Snapchat, etc. But also, I think just educating them personally, telling them it's wrong, and they have to wait for 18, and don't be, influenced by their friends who are growing up too fast in their schools.
Your knowledge in this area far exceeds mine. What should some of the companies involved be doing?
Well, I think when it's being sold, they should be asking who it's for, and are they over 18? Which is what we always ask in my company. You know, is the phone for someone who's under 18? Would you like us to block it? We do recommend it, but I think. I think it's all on the parents, to be honest, and also the telecoms companies from the point of sale to make sure that the kids don't have access to these websites.
Same point, finally, I'll put to you. In some areas, then, candidly, mum and dad should be doing more, shouldn't they?
100%. You know, it's their kids at the end of the day, and if they're not monitoring what they're doing, they're being bad parents.
But if someone's listening now and thinks, well, that's all right for Daniel, he's quite savvy, he understands. But where would a concerned mum, dad, or possibly even brother, where would they start? How would they start to learn?
Well, there's two ways. Probably going into their local network shop. So if they're with EE, O2, Vodafone, you know, just speak to an advisor. They can do it within 5 minutes. They can block it and everything will be hunky-dory, to be honest. So it's very easy to access. Retail shops are still open. On the high street, all the shops are closing down, bar coffee shops and mobile phone shops. So there's always somewhere to go. There's one in every town, Nick.
Enjoyed it. Look after the children. I sense you probably will. They're lucky. They've got a very invested dad. Daniel, thanks for all your input on that. Now, if you're still trying to work it out, just for the news, I played you this.
Después de las últimas noticias, una discusión con Nick Ferrari sobre la importancia de aprender idiomas.
Which was, of course, as you all know. Coming up after the news, Nick Ferrari will discuss the importance of learning a language, and this is as more A-level students are now dropping French, German, Spanish, as you just heard, and other languages, and taking in its place PE, physical education. So the way the world is going, I don't know, you find yourself hopefully being able to go and work or even going to a restaurant. You go to an Italian restaurant, you go to a Spanish restaurant. You can't read the menu, but you can do some press-ups. How does that make any sense? Well, you know how to handle a medicine ball. Now, this report comes from the Higher Education Policy Institute. It reveals steep drops in school and university teacher recruitment in these languages. both at A-level and then, of course, through to university degree. Now, I've often told you about how close I was to my late dad. I listened to him on absolutely everything, bar one thing. Well, actually, two things. He told me to become a barrister, and I didn't do that, as you've already worked out. The other thing is I should study languages at A-level. I don't know why I didn't listen. It's so embarrassing with a last name like mine. Particularly when you, well, not now, because I'm old, but when you were young, you go to an Italian restaurant and they say, well, you, oh, so what's this? I don't know. Well, you've got an Italian. No, I actually have no, and then you make a reservation for, I have learnt a bit now. I can kind of understand it, but I can't speak it. So what about the importance of learning these languages? How have languages helped you? Well, that little tease, as they call it, or promo, or advert, whatever you want to say, was voiced by one of my LBC colleagues, Guy Stewart, LBC reporter Guy Stewart, who's in the studio with me now. What first attracted you to learning languages, Guy?
Bueno, cuando tuve 12 años, tuve la oportunidad de elegir un idioma para aprender en la escuela, y había una maestra súper interesante, y con las primeras clases de español, pues nada más me captivé totalmente su lección.
Something about a donkey, margarine, and a heavy storm. No?
And no.
What is it you said then? What attracted you to it?
My Spanish is not what it used to be, but...
Well, it's pretty damned impressive. Oh, please, don't get me started. Don't ask me to sing.
As many young people do around the ages of 11, 12, I had the choice to study languages, and it was, I think, French, Spanish, and German on offer. And I went for Spanish, but I was lucky enough, I guess, to have a Spanish teacher who is herself Spanish.
Right.
And just was totally captivated. I think the way she taught it was great, but also just getting...
What way did she teach you then? What made it so appealing?
It was so rooted in kind of her experience as a Spaniard, like anecdotes every day on the culture and the society. And then hearing it firsthand from a Spaniard as well, there's, you know, no better experience, I guess. That took me through high school, and then my first degree was in Spanish.
Oh my God, you've done it to that level. Have you lived and worked over there?
Yeah, I lived in Spain for a year, for my study abroad.
Did you get your accent that, you know, people said to you, mate, you could have been born in Madrid?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just naturally talented, of course, Nick. But no, I ended up in what in Spanish you might say, the quinto infierno, the middle of nowhere.
Oh, right, okay.
Which, when I was first given the location I was going to, of course, I had friends that were doing Madrid, Barcelona, and this was Cáceres in Extremadura, which is right next to Portugal. And I thought, oh, here we go. This is literally, the middle of nowhere.
Up a whoop-whoop, as we say in Australia.
Yeah, it was great, though, because actually it forced me to just totally, like, fully immerse myself in Spanish culture and language and used very little English.
And how has languages helped you in your career?
I think the biggest thing for me, especially as a young person transitioning from teenager to young adult, is kind of the confidence, really, because when you go to a foreign country, you do get a massive cultural shock, even from one European country to another. And you kind of just have to totally accept the fact that you will sound like an idiot and you won't understand cultural inferences, little jokes here and there. Even the kissing on the cheek when you first meet people, you know. It really just kind of, it allows you to leave all those anxieties that you may have had in one life and kind of enjoy a fresh start somewhere else.
Lastly, do you regret you can't do more star jumps, though? Should you think of done PE? Is that one of the...
Well, do not ask me about my PE experience in high school. I do have no regrets, Nick.
No regrets at all. Guy, thanks for being such a good sport. LBC reporter Guy Stewart, and thanks for voicing the ad for that. We'll take your calls on that. So how have languages helped you? It is a strange one, isn't it? I mean, I suppose if they were dropping English and Spanish and... I'm so sorry, French and German and Spanish for a subject, I don't know, like computer or computer engineering or whatever it might be, website design and technology, you'd kind of get it. But PE? Strange. Dean's in Lee on C. Dean, what are you going to tell me? Dean in Lee? Lee Dean, good morning.
It's actually Dan, Nick.
Dan, I'm so sorry. Gosh, this is new glasses time. Dan, I apologise. What language are you trying to learn?
So I've been learning Spanish for about 9 months now, as an adult. It's something I always wanted to do.
What piqued your interest 9 months ago to actually start? I mean, I've always wanted to learn a musical instrument. I've still not done it. I need something to sort of kick me up the rear. So what made it happen to you?
I think just kind of realising that I could. Like, there's so many resources out there. And I just thought, well,
I'm an adult. I can do what I want. So
why Spanish? Spanish partner, mum, dad, whatever?
Well, it's I think it's one of the... It's definitely in the top five most spoken languages in the world.
I think it's number three, isn't it? Along with English, Mandarin and Spanish.
Yeah, I think
you're
right.
But don't quote me. Yeah, go on.
So
yeah.
Just like opening up doors for travel and like consuming media as well. So like...
You're not at school, I can tell from your voice, you're not still at school. When you were at school, presumably you had the opportunity to learn some French or Spanish or whatever.
So
were you attracted to it then?
I took French in school.
Yeah.
That was the only one, only option I had, but I did enjoy French in school. But yeah, I think once you leave school, you kind of forget that, you know, you do have the opportunity to learn. And especially these days,
and
you
so
can
you
just pick up something and do it.
So is it, if you did well at French, is it coming quite easily to you?
Yeah, so I think that having that little bit of a base of another Latin-rooted language, French, in school, does give you a little bit of a head start, because every now and then you come across a word and you're like, oh, well, that's actually pretty much the same in French, but...
Well, here we go. I've got the number. One of my colleagues has finally stopped dancing to McFly and has actually served something of use to me. Here are the most spoken languages in the world. Number one, English, 1.515 billion. Second, Mandarin Chinese, 1.14 billion. Then a bit of a drop to Hindi at 609 million. And then Spanish, 559 million. Then Standard Arabic, 332 million. And then French at 312 million. So if you've got a bit of French and you're doing Spanish, you'll have three of the top six languages. You'll be in a pretty good place, Dan.
Yeah, I've got a couple of billion people to chat with, so I should be okay.
Well, make sure you limit it to me. Dan, sorry I called you, Dean. Dan, good to have you on. Good luck with your studies. Wayne's in Brighton. Wayne, how do languages help you? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. Yeah, I've been teaching languages for 17 years now.
Have you? Which ones?
Yes. French and German, so from Key Stage 3 up to A-level.
Right. So Key Stage 3, what age would the pupil be?
So starting in year 7, so from around...
11.
Age 11.
See. So secondary school, effectively.
That's right. And what I can see during my career is that French is still clinging on, but schools are choosing to close language, well, German particularly. And
Spanish...
Genau.
Oh, good heavens, enough. Yes, all right. Yes, go on. Yes.
But I was fortunate enough that I had links with foreign languages. I've got German family. My dad spoke German. But the fact is, I went to university, studied French and German, got a degree, trained to be a teacher. And then that was early 2000s.
Right.
And that now, since 2004, when the then government chose to make languages non-compulsory at GCSE, languages just pretty much fell off a cliff edge in terms of the numbers of students choosing to do them at GCSE. Then obviously, because the numbers then were lower, there were subsequently lower numbers of students choosing at A-level.
It's self-fulfilling, effectively, isn't it?
And then what happened was that university departments have been closing since then, their languages departments, which means that really students have got fewer options. So I just think at the time, it's short-sighted government policy as well. And I think now with Brexit, a lot of native speakers left the country, which means that schools are struggling to recruit.
Having worked in this field, why do you think teaching of languages should be compulsory?
Well, I just think it gives the students a broader education. It allows them to actually not just think that everybody speaks English, which I think is a common sort of belief, which is obviously wrong. And I just think a little bit goes a long way. And I just think it opens minds and it opens, you know, your eyes to different cultures and different beliefs. And I just think that there's a danger of becoming too insular.
This is a bit of a crass question, but I'm going to ask it. Well, I've made a career out of asking it. Is of the two languages, French and German, is there one that seems to go down quicker with the pupils? Do they seem to register French quicker than they do German, or is it totally down to the individual?
Good question. I think every language has its difficulties and has its plus points. I think with regards to English being a Germanic language, I think we should look closely at learning more German. And I think, at least on my career, I can see that even with boys and the way that their brains seem to work, is that German seems to go well with them. Not to say the girls can't study German.
No, sure.
Study German. But, you know, there seems to be a trend. But it's just unfortunate that, particularly with Brexit now, and with Germany being a big powerhouse in Europe with business and economy, that why aren't we pushing language learning a bit more?
Agree with you. Wayne, Rick Wieland, Duncan, auf Wiederhören.
Ja, danke.
Thank you very much. Hear from you again. Yes, thank you. Just dropping a bit of German in. Thanks, Wayne. 9:46, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Nigel Farage has told Nick it is the wrong moment for the UK, France and Canada to recognise a Palestinian state. The Transport Secretary is to meet with the head of the air traffic control provider, NATS, after another technical failure yesterday. And Heathrow is preparing to unveil its long-awaited plan for a third runway. LBC weather, heavy thundery showers across the south, quite cloudy elsewhere. A high of 25 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. One lane is closed on the M4 with queues because of an accident eastbound from Junction 5 for Langley to Junction 4B for the M25. There are long delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 17 for Maple Cross to Junction 16 for the M40. That's again due to an accident. The A400 Junction Road in Tufnell Park is blocked. That's in both directions because of a fallen tree at Fortess Road. In Hornsey, the A103 Church Lane is blocked northbound due to a broken down vehicle from Tottenham Lane to Ribblesdale Road. Flooding in Euston is causing queues on the A501 Euston Road westbound at Gordon Street, and there are flight cancellations from Heathrow and Gatwick airports following a technical fault.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
The statistics are truly staggering, but do they justify the imminent rollout of facial recognition technology?
James O'Brien on LBC.
What makes matchday? You know Maggie's cap is the vibe.
Mate, piking all day, every day.
Mark, the cabbie, bigger fan than we are.
Banging out some Not the Top 20 on the way to the game.
It's a great podcast.
All the expert pundits down the dog and duck.
Oh, Kebab Palace, he gets the chilli-garlic ratio spot on.
Matchday is about more than just the game. It's an experience shared with local businesses at the heart of every EFL club and community. That's why we're proud to support the businesses behind the badge. Sage, official accounting software partner of the EFL.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it from your app store now.
Do you like the sound of work that has plenty of giggles? Where you'll build lifelong skills, as well as wobbly towers, where you'll feel part of a team, or even have the chance to lead one, where every little thing you do makes a big difference.
Superstar, you did it!
Do something big. Work with small children. Search Early Years Careers to find out more.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. Text CLAIM to 86688. My Claim Group. Authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. You don't need to use a CMC. You can claim direct to your lender and the Financial Ombudsman for free. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
Psst, have you heard?
About what?
About Boots Optician's Ultimate Eye Test with OptiMap Scan.
Why are you whispering?
I think it's for VIPs. It's an in-depth look into your eye that can detect health conditions that other eye scans might miss.
Why are you still whispering?
I can't seem to stop.
Book an eye test and ask about OptiMap in-store at Boots Opticians, rated the UK's favourite opticians.
Selected stores, charges apply. Google review data, May 2024 to May 2025 of national chain opticians only. Contact marketing at boots-opticians.co.uk for details.
Train to Peckham. Kids in tow, rooftop cinema time.
Six packs of popcorn. I think one will do, Nina.
Ah, clear skies, comfy seats, a talking panda. Clearly what we all needed. Okay, everyone seated and happily doing panda impressions. I wonder when Nan can watch the kids so I can come back with James. Oh, just the two of us.
Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced tickets from only £8 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
We'll talk languages, but let's just feature a couple of emails or texts that are coming in on other subjects. Mal says, Sylvia Young started as a parent at Wanstead School, where her daughter Frances went to, and she became a star herself. She started a drama school at the school. Other stars include Nick Berry. Yes, we had an appreciation of that great career. Clive, listening in Rossendale, says, as a 70-year-old man, I've been listening to your contributors talk about these software applications. A quick Google, and I found out how to get it. So if a technology Luddite like myself, says Clive, can do it in 2 minutes, imagine how IT-literate 15-year-olds will be able to use it. Nigel Farage does have a real point. We're also talking languages. Where's your name? Richard, I teach English in Spain. Every single high school student has a competent level of English to B2 level Oxford exam. Many go on to do C1, whatever that means. Also, many of the schools are bilingual, so we're on the port town, so when the boats come in, all the English come off, they just raise their voice and speak slowly and are shocked when the answer in English is ignorance. That is ignorance. Well, it was a mistake. I'm 90% certain, and if he's listening, ring me up and I'll apologise, but I'm 90% certain it was Michael Gove who took away the compulsory education of languages, and I think that was a terrible, terrible misstep. I mean, some of you will go back to your school days. Oh, I used to sit there conjugating a French verb. Je regarde, tu regardes, you regard, nous regardons. Ugh, it taught me nothing. But you know what? It does help you speak with other people. Lulu's in Richmond. Hello, Lulu.
Hello. Hello.
How are you?
I only ever talk to you about things that aren't politics. Last time it was cars.
Cars. What did we talk about? Cars.
Because, well, I actually drive EVs now, but I was talking about my old Volvo, I think.
Ah, but did you see the story today that women are attracted to a man with a Fiat Uno more than a Lamborghini? Did you see
it? I didn't see it, but I can probably understand it.
Well, the headline in the Times, ditch the flashy car, buy a hatchback to woo the women. So why did I run that Ferrari for all those years?
My first boyfriend always wanted a Ferrari Dino, and he actually taught me about cars, but we're not talking about cars, are we?
We're not talking about that boy either. Whatever happened to him?
I still know him.
Oh, you do? Oh, that's nice. So you get on?
We do, yeah.
That's cool. Right. How many languages can you speak?
Well, I'm not doing... Well, you talked about C1, so with the European language thing, you have A1, A2, B1, B2, C1, C2.
Oh, is that what it is? I honestly didn't know what the hell I was reading then, but that's...
Well, A's is beginners, B's are intermediate, C's fluent and business.
Ah.
So I'm probably heading for a B2 in French.
Oh, that's pretty impressive.
But I've been learning it forever. My dad went from a very working class background in Bristol to Cambridge. His dad saw something in him, and he was the only guy with a West Country accent, and all the other people were earls and lords in the rooms next to him. No women in the '50s.
Right.
And I think it is.
Well, there
how
were
you
women in the '50s. It's just they weren't at the university.
Well, sorry.
We definitely had women in the '50s. We had to have done, or else I wouldn't be here.
All right. So I think it's how you grow up and what surrounds you as well. And I think.
But
so
hang
we
on, did
are
Dad speak
of,
a different language? I don't understand.
He spoke French and German.
French and
he
German.
He did languages fluently. I used to be cross because he did give me extra French lessons after school and things, but he only really ever swore in both languages because he thought we didn't understand.
But you did.
Well, we did, yeah. And he sent me to an Anglo-European school in Essex that had only just opened a year before I got there.
Right.
And that was all about trying to get me to go to Cambridge as well, sort of thing, and do languages. And I didn't get to do that, but my daughter, Poppy, has went to UCL. She speaks French and Italian fluently. We're all kind of Francophiles and language lovers, although my youngest is called Belle because of the Francophile thing, and she doesn't want to do any languages. But we all understand, well, three of us out of four understand languages a lot. Poppy is now in Germany at the Goethe Institute doing German because her intended is German, and so she wants to now do that. And I'm going to probably go in September to do it because if there are any grandchildren and things, I want to.
Do you think the grandchildren will be raised in Germany then?
No, they'll be here.
Oh, right.
And I'm actually in Ham, which no one's ever heard of.
I have.
Near Richmond.
I know.
Oh,
where
good.
Ham is. Yeah.
And we have a German school here, so I'm hoping that they'll move a bit closer. But I do think that languages, even if you can just say hello to someone or show willing, and, you know, I would never, when people are worried about speaking a language in English to me, I always say, I couldn't speak your language,
no, I agree
and you shouldn't. And it's right, one of your callers said, oh, if you, you might sound like, no, it wasn't, it was your associate. If you speak quite badly, but you make an effort. Honestly, when someone speaks to you in broken English, you can always understand
what
they're saying.
Of course, and I agree with you. Ham, you're near Petersham Nurseries then?
I am.
Oh, it's beautiful down there, isn't it?
I know, Francesco.
Oh, do you? I assume he's the owner, is he? I don't know what we're talking about. I've only just eaten there.
He's Italian.
Is he? Oh, I'll have to say hi the next time. It's a super, super place. Lulu, enjoy the next meal or walk you have around Petersham Nurseries. Have a good day. Love to all your family, particularly the young woman in Germany, learning German. Harry's in Crewe. Harry, oh, German for you as well. You're learning it now, are you? That's interesting.
I am indeed. Good morning, Nick.
Hello, sir.
I'm 26, so I only left school 10 years ago. And I did it at GCSE, but never carried it on after that. And it's one of my biggest regrets now.
Yeah, I know. Should have listened to my dad. Yeah.
Yeah, so the main reasons I've picked it up again are professional. You know, I've got kind of a long-term goal of living and working in another country.
In Germany itself or anywhere in Europe?
I mean, I think, I'll be a bit buggered now I've picked German.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, it probably
a little bit of outdoor
be.
Language there. I apologise if we can limit it to the words that don't cause offence.
Sorry.
Yeah, Dankeschön, as we say.
And the other thing is my best friend at work is actually a guy called Tobias, and he's based in our Berlin office. So I'm quite lucky that whenever I have a meeting with him on Teams, we can attempt to do the whole thing in German, and it's quite helpful, and it's quite nice really that I get that exposure.
Good luck with your learning. Congratulations on you. Hope it goes well. Good luck with your conversations. Let's get one last one in. Nisha's in Liverpool. This is Spanish we're talking about. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Hi, Nick. I'm a first-time caller.
Great to have you. I'm afraid I can't even say good morning. I have no Spanish whatsoever. What attracted you to that language?
So I've always been very into languages. And I guess when you study, go to uni and everything, you kind of don't always have the time. And then... Luckily for us, when COVID happened, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to use the time, take up a new language. I think it's great. I think a lot of it is about immersion as well. So a lot of people use things like Duolingo, but I just thought I'd call up and see, echoing a lot of things.
How easy was it? But, what was the tough bit about learning the language, would you say?
I think for me, it's like the other callers have said, it's just confidence, and it's just trying to speak it as much as you can with.
Should we make it compulsory for children up to 16? I think it's a real shame that's been taken away. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I think kids should be given the option at least of a range of languages. Sometimes schools are a bit limited. You might just have like French or German or something, but other languages as well might have sort of broadened people's minds.
Okay. Is it grazie? Is that about right? Grazie? Is that how I say thank you?
Gracias.
I told you. Yeah. See, I could have done it. I could have said Italian, German, French, bit of Portuguese. You just got the one I don't even know how to speak. Nisha, good luck. Well done with your studies. Thank you. I hope it goes well for you. I'm sorry there's no more time to talk about languages, but at least it made a bit of a change of pace, didn't it? But I'm done for today. James O'Brien's the other side of the news here on LBC. I'm going to be with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Did you never watch Fawlty Towers?
Well,
idiot. Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where later in the programme, I will turn our attention to a strange little story from the British point of view that, relevant to what we were discussing yesterday. You know, I told you that Australia was going to ban all under-16s from all social media in September. Yesterday, they added YouTube to the list, and it's prompted a couple of questions that I can't wait to hear your answers to. But we begin with an issue on which I'm truly torn. The statistics that I'll share with you shortly regarding the percentage of people who get charged after being arrested due to facial recognition technology might change your view on the whole issue.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Donald Trump has warned Canada's move to recognise a Palestinian state could threaten a trade deal with the US. The Prime Minister, Mark Carney, has announced plans to do so in September, matching similar proposals from the UK and France. He says the decision was prompted by the catastrophe in Gaza. Reform leader Nigel Farage has told LBC it's the wrong time and only serves to reward Hamas.
The only people that can broker a peace are, I mean, you know, it's America. America is the only country that can do this. America is Israel's closest ally in every sense. Now, I know there are, of course, a lot of other conflicts going on around the world, but it's only America that can do it.
Ministers say they are working closely with the air traffic control provider NATS to understand the cause of a technical glitch. A radar-related issue led to more than 150 flights being cancelled yesterday afternoon. Ryanair has called for NATS chief executive to resign. Former air traffic controller Michelle Robson says things went wrong at the worst possible moment.
Part of the problem is, at this time of year in particular, it's peak season. They're literally running at the absolute capacity at every hour of the day. And the problem is, once something goes wrong, then it's very, very difficult to try and catch that up again, even if it's only for a relatively short period.
Heathrow is due to hand in its long-awaited proposals for a third runway. It'll include plans to divert the M25 through a tunnel at a total cost of up to £60 billion. A number of rival proposals will also be considered. A Met Office yellow warning for thunderstorms has come into force across southern England. It will stay in place until 9 o'clock tonight, with flash flooding and some travel disruption expected. And the latest audience figures show LBC now reaches 3.4 million people across the UK. 1.4 million people are tuning into James O'Brien every week, so thank you for listening. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 26 at 91.63. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 16. LBC weather, those heavy thundery showers developing across the south, quite cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Mom?
Dad?
We need to chat.
I think I'm old enough for a phone.
All my mates have one.
I want to be in the group chat.
But is it true when you post something...
It's kind of hard to take back.
Or strangers might message me.
That they're fake accounts. Bots.
Toxic comments.
I want to know what's right and what's not.
So can we have the chat? You know,
the phone chat?
It can be hard to know what to do when it comes to kids and phones. Search EE Phone Chat from the UK's best network.
To verify best network, see ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Imagine a policeman walking towards you. Imagine a policeman walking towards you now. How do you feel? Straight away. Depends slightly on context, right? Depends where you are. If you are in the environs of a football match and the policeman or woman is on high alert, as it were, then they might be giving off a slightly aggressive air and you may find that slightly intimidating. But there's a police officer coming towards you now. How do you feel? Okay, how did you feel when you were 10? I wonder how different answers will be according to class and ethnicity. Pretty different, I imagine, because if you were a young black lad, then you would be immediately fearful of being stopped and searched. Again, despite being entirely innocent. If you're a snotty-nosed little prep school boy like me in a maroon cap, you probably would have felt absolutely nothing except, oh, hello, officer, thank you very much. How nice to see you. Carry on. And yet, as you get older, does that interaction change? And of course, the big question, perhaps, is not ethnicity or class, necessarily, but criminality. Here is a police officer coming towards you. How do you feel? Well, I've got next door's electricity money in my pocket, or I've got 26 cream eggs that I just nicked from Lidl in my pocket, or I'm on the run because I battered somebody last week. Do you see what I mean? That is going to affect how you feel when the police come towards you. You are wanted. You could be fearful that you've signed up to an organisation that you thought was entirely innocuous, and you're now running the risk of being done for terrorism. There's all sorts of things that you might be worried about. But would you be worried if it was a camera pointing at you? And you had nothing to fear, or indeed to hide. I try again. Have another think. Go on. Who would be worried about that camera today? We'll talk about possible futures in a moment. But who would be worried about that camera today? Answer, according to the Metropolitan Police, high harm individuals, high harm offenders, people wanted for pretty unpleasant offences. they wouldn't like the camera. And when you see the statistics that the Metropolitan Police have released with regard to how LFR, or live facial recognition technology, is used, you would struggle, I think, to mount a very powerful argument against them. The success rate is highly impressive. But is it enough? And does it involve the sacrifice of something valuable? When we break down subjects into the... we become a little bit too phone-in focused, you and me, some mornings. And we talk about the pendulum topics or the hardy perennials. So a hardy perennial, obviously, is a subject that comes around and around again. And my job always is to find interesting ways of talking about it. And happily, as Thomas just alluded to in the news bulletins a moment ago, it seems to still somehow be working. And then the pendulum subject is the subject which you begin knowing there's a very real chance of your mind changing in the course of the next hour. Do you know what worries me? It doesn't keep me awake at night, but I worry about a pendulum subject becoming a hardy perennial. So you sort of think, why are we doing this every day together if we don't actually turn a pendulum subject into a firm opinion? You talk about this and another caller comes on and talks about that and I go, oh dear, yes, you're right, that's not... Last time it happened, probably the junior doctor strike, when literally at the end of the hour that we dedicated to the industrial action that's ended in the last couple of days, we took two calls from two resident doctors espousing two very different opinions. And the first one had me nodding along and then the next one came on and I thought, no, actually she's right. I should be supporting them in this industrial action, even though they received what looks like on paper, when confined entirely to percentages, a very generous raise last year. It's a pendulum subject. But if a pendulum subject becomes a hardy perennial, then are we making any progress at all together? I don't know. But I think facial recognition has, or is in danger of, becoming a perennial pendulum. My first band was called the Perennial Pendulums. I think it is in danger of becoming a perennial pendulum, because I'm about to start talking about it. And I'm fairly clear that I currently think, based partly on these statistics, I'm fairly clear that it's a good idea. And I shall share the statistics with you as soon as I found them. I had them in my hand as I came down the stairs a moment ago. The knowledge I have is that you will then ring me with arguments that are so powerful, I will be compelled to change my mind slightly. I'll be compelled to have a little think about it. The way it works is this, okay? A camera sits on top of a police van and scans the faces of people as they walk past. It immediately assesses them against a wanted list and alerts officers on the grounds there is a match. So you are wanted for something. As yet unspecified, you walk past one of these cameras perched on top of a van, and if the technology beeps, then you will get your collar felt. You will be invited to step aside, sir. 773 charges or calls.